This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi. And joining us via Skype is Pastor Martin Lindstedt, who was with us last night, and we're going to go at it again this evening. Pastor Lindstedt, thank you for joining us.
Hail Victory, everyone. This is Pastor Martin Luther Dierzinski Lindstedt, Archbishop of Missouri for the Church of Jesus Christ Christians / Area Nations of Missouri, a incorporated public benefits corporation of the state of Missouri.
You know, I was thinking about going back over the same stuff and I forgot what it was. You're supposed to keep talking, Pastor.
Oh, okay. Well, you asked me what
Hail Victory. Right. Dang it. What does Hail Victory mean?
Okay. Pastor Richard Butler instituted that. He'd go ahead and write Hail Victory at every single one of his written communications of any importance. And essentially, that's a tradition of the Church of Jesus Christ Christian Area Nations for the past 40 years. Now, there are other competing area nations factions, and most of them, I believe, are run by Zogboss, because essentially they ask for $25 to join and $10 a month. And essentially, I consider it nothing more than a scam to go ahead and make the local mini-fuhrer go ahead and give him beer and meth money or whatever. But Hail Victory, you go ahead and you say it just like the Germans used to say Sieg Heil, which meant the same thing. Sieg Heil means Hail Victory. And they'd go ahead and say the same thing after every important speech. Although by 1945, I imagine Hail Victory ran a little bit hollow. But by going ahead and saying Hail Victory, in addition to claim of the traditions of the Church of Jesus Christ Christian Area Nations, I also go ahead and illustrate my inflexible belief that the dual seed line Christian Identity Church shall prevail. In this current civil war, which is ongoing and will morph into a great tribulation, that we in Jesus Christ shall indeed endure. And part of the heraldry of Aryan nations, about every single, there's various ones of them, but about every single one involves a sword and then a crown leaning upon the hilt of the sword, which goes ahead and shows that through the sword we shall go ahead and indeed inherit the crown or political power. Mao Zedong said, political power grows out of the barrel of the gun. This heraldry illustrates that political and religious power arises from the sword. And we do indeed believe that. And when I was in Germany, I was pretty well telling about when I was in Germany from 1981 to 1983, that the older Germans would look at us with rather hard eyes because they did like Adolf Hitler. Even though I never met a single West German who ever admitted to fighting on the Western Front. Every single one of them had fought either at North Africa, a few of them, but most of them had all fought on the Eastern Front, which is really true.
Let me tell you just a funny story. The rich German that I worked for, he married a younger, he was a bit older. In any event, he married a younger wife, and they had a baby, and he used to hold his baby up, his baby's hand up, and say, Heil Hitler.
Well, probably only before in family and close friends.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt.
In Germany, it is against the law. Well, it's really against the law to go ahead and say anything even remotely nice about the Nazi regime. And the reason of it is that the Allies, especially the Soviet Union, punished anybody who even... We had denazification, but the Soviets carried it rather, rougher here. And it depended on the character of the Allies. But it is against the law to even say that 6 million dirty kikes were not killed in World War II, and they weren't. I did a poll you know, on a few of the forums here, of how many Jews died during the Holocaust? And I said, you have a choice between 6 billion, 666 million, whatever, or 6,666,000, 666,000, 666, and option E was not nearly enough, however many there were. And most people went ahead and clicked the not nearly enough, however many there were. And Jews go ahead and tell them hoax swappers. But if you go ahead and say something, you know, in favor of Adolf Hitler, or if you say something, you know, publicly, or you say anything against the Jews in the Holocaust, you're going to go ahead and, you know, be subject to either a heavy fine or jail time and a heavy fine. That's what ended up happening to Ernst Zundel. He got out, a couple months ago. And so you still end up having the occupation-imposed justice upon Germany even after reunification. But I remember talking to a German girl in 1985 or 1986 saying that both the Americans and the Russians want to go ahead and keep Germany divided because they are scared of the industrious, productive Germans.
And well, they should be.
Christian Identity holds that Germany is actually the true tribe of Judah. And by the way, last night when we were wondering about Chris, who Chris was, pretty well it was my teeth saying Christian Identity, and there's a Chris in Christian. I went ahead and listened to that, and I sort of have a little whistle in my voice. And what it results from is pretty well the air escaping from the remnants of my broken teeth.
All right, I'm glad you. I assume that. One more thing about the 6 million Jews. I used to have a friend who used to say 6 million more. That was his response to that crap. But on your speech, I assumed that you spoke the way you do because of the breaking of your teeth, but I don't get the impression, or I think you'd probably mentioned it at the top, and you'd be pissed and hot. But because you gave me the name of that, I think his name is Don Hunt. I called up the Newton County Sheriff's Office, and I asked for Don Hunt. Told him who I was, and told him I was on the air, and I wanted to interview him. And the lady passed me back to a Captain Levins.
Richard Levins. I went to school with that bastard, and what he likes doing is he likes torturing prisoners with a taser, but go on.
Well, I told him, you know, who I was and told him I was calling to request a telephone interview with Don Hunt in regard to, and I left it there, and I just wanted to mention that, you know, it's in regard to Martin Lindstedt, and he kind of chuckled and seemed eager to chime in. So I said, well, do you think maybe I could get an interview with you about Martin Lindstedt? And he said, sure, I'll talk with you about Martin. And I had a maybe 10-15 minute interview with him and asked him about what you told me last night, that this Don Hunt pushed your face into the concrete and broke your teeth. And he said, you know, you can go back and listen to it. I'm almost tempted to play it for you now and let you comment, but it only make you real mad, so I don't know if I want to do that.
Well, let me just
summarize what he said. He said that basically Martin was being Martin, and he tripped and fell, and that he didn't see it, but that's what happened, and that then we got into the thing about, well, why was he put in the nut house? And they said, well, he wanted to represent himself, and back and forth. To me, what I heard, it's very disturbing that they had a psychiatric analysis of you simply because maybe you're a truck driver and you don't talk like them fucking lawyers down there that they're used to talking to, but by God, you wanted to represent yourself or whatever you were rambling on. And they don't. See, that's the thing about the judiciary. They fucking expect you to talk like a fucking Jew down there. And if you don't talk like a fucking Jew down there, they think you're fucking crazy. So I'm totally on your fucking side when it comes to them saying, well, wait a minute, what's this guy acting like an idiot far down here? We expect them all to act like fucking Jews down there. So, you know, but I wasn't acting like that with Captain Levitz. I was being nice. And so we went on, and I kept asking him questions, and boy, he really tore into your ass. I mean, I gave him an opportunity to do so, and he did. He said, I asked him about the charge. Was he incarcerated because of child molestation? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what's the disposition on that? And they said, well, the prosecutor dismissed the charge. I said, well, that's kind of unusual. You know, that you'd think that anybody accused of child molestation, you'd really go after them, try to get the maximum, convict them, and get the maximum sentence. And then he said, well, the boy involved was kind of slow, and that the family got to him. And I said, so it was a matter of the victim changing his mind. And then that's when he repeated himself. He said, well, no, it was a matter of he was just slow. And I thought to myself afterwards, not that I was trying to be adversarial with this captain, I was not, I was being nice. I thought to myself, well, if he's so slow that he can't testify, why the hell did you fucking believe him in the first place when this crap was alleged against the defendant? I mean, either and moreover, if you truly believe that Martin Lindstedt, I didn't say this, but I'm thinking this to myself, if you thought that sucker molested a child, you tell me you're going to fucking dismiss a charge? Nobody fucking dismisses a charge over a child molester. That don't fucking happen. So, you know, it pissed me off.
Well, I disagree. I disagree with you on a number of occasions. Like, no one dismisses a charge against a child molester. I went ahead and brought up to where Looper Baldwin molested my granddaughter Helen in 2000. And we waited around, and here comes Dwayne Allen and Kathy Gorham, who runs the juvenile division over at Newton County. And they were inquiring, and they found out that I used to take baths with my grandchildren and my daughter and my granddaughter Helen, you know, as well. And they came up, and essentially there was no law against it. They're going to harass me unless I promise not to go ahead and do it again. And I said, look, you know, under a normal situation here, I would be able to go ahead and have your head and your family's entire head and raise them on pikes and skin you out alive and turn your house into a shit, you know, into a public outhouse, you know, under a lawful regime here. You have no business coming and, you know, interfering here and then threatening to use the power of the state and going to the public schools and pulling all this crap. But in order to go ahead and keep you from doing it, and I know you're going to go ahead and nose around, I will give you my word that I won't take any more, you know, baths with my daughter Helen. And they were saying, well, that's because Looper molested. I said, oh, by the way, what is the disposition of the charges against Looper? Well, what happened is they figured out that Looper, he was, you know, not smart enough to stand trial. So I went ahead and chewed on their ass, and they went ahead and, you know, left. I put it up on my webpage. The thing about Richard Levins is that in 1995, he actually sort of saved me from this mestizo bandito named Chandler, who was beating me up at the will of the Granby police. And him and another policeman actually went ahead and sort of saved my, you know, life from being beaten up by this pig.
I couldn't. You know, I heard an affection mixed in there. You're confirming something I heard in his voice.
Well, what happens is that me and Richard Chandler actually went to college at Missouri Southern State College in 1983 and 1984. So we have known each other for a long time. Now he used to be work at security at Sam's, and he was much thinner. Now he's just a big fat pig. And what happens is that he got fired or whatever, and he left, you know, the employ of Walmart, and he became a police officer. And he did save me and another police officer from a beating at the hands of this Mexican pig Well, I got the beating. I got a bunch of, you know, my hair pulled out. And later on, that pig got arrested for wiretapping the Granby City Council. But essentially, that's just the way, you know, policemen are. They just go ahead and they like going ahead and taking people and falsely arresting them, beating them up. So I sort of owed him one. But what he did is he rose, and now he's in command of the jail. And in 2001, they had this Blood and Crips thing up in Joplin, and these niggers went ahead and, you know, killed, and I was in jail with them in 2005. One was named McDaniels, and the other was named Donald Overton. And Overton was the driver, and McDaniel went ahead and shot dead her shot dead his girlfriend because she was selling, I'm not sure which one's Bloods and which one's Crips, but she was selling the other gang's dope, other gang's dope here. So he went ahead and plugged her dead, and a whole bunch of niggers got arrested, and they all started snitching on each other. And Overton was up because he already had two life sentences in Texas, and he liked Newton County jails better than he liked, the prisons here. And I got, they were separated, and one of the things, they were quite interested in me, and they were saying that my webpage was taken down and the stuff that I posted about what had been going on. But in 2000 or 2001, Levins got in the habit. He went ahead and tasered this white guy who was giving one of the niggers, in that, named Coon. He went ahead and he tasered the crap out of this white guy. Well, on July 25th, 2005, he goes ahead and there's this guy named Cooper. He's a pretty nice guy, but Levins wants to go ahead and say, well, these prisoners are getting uppity here. I want you to taser the next one that gives trouble here. And so Cooper goes in with the taser and says, okay, y'all get down to your cell. And this nigger named Overton, he sort of slows. So why do we have to go to our cell? And Levin's just behind him. He goes ahead and grabs the taser right out of Cooper's hand, and tasers that nigger twice. And, and it's like he's poleaxed here. And he's sort of flopping on the ground. And then, now, go ahead and get up there and do it here. And I was laying down at the time, and I was the only one in my cell. Right next door, there were two people in it. And what they do is with political prisoners, this is probably what's happened to Edgar Steele, he probably got the only private room in the entire jail. And they try to keep political prisoners away, especially the ones that know legal stuff. And later on, you'd end up having six of them stacked to a two-man cell, which they call Chomo Hiltons. And but anyway, I went ahead and looked, and since I had a camera in the room, since I had a camera for suicide prevention or something like that, because I was a political prisoner, they wanted to keep a very good eye on me. They pretty well said, hey, Overton's, Overton looks like he's about to have a heart attack. Could you go ahead and say, well, I said, I better go ahead and get administrative whatever here. See, the pigs, they essentially go ahead and you violate one of the little made-up rules. They think that they go ahead and get to, they say they get to go ahead and give you loss of privilege or loss of visitors or whatever. And I got some of this shit here, and I just told one of these pigs, don't you come whining to me. When you suffer, when you're in jail under a revolutionary regime, you suffer a disciplinary administrative castration. But, going on, I went ahead and told them that, and they came in. And, one of them chew, and Levins just went ahead and tasered the shit out of them. Anyway, when I got back down from the nut house for a trial, on July 31st, 2005, here's fat ass old Levins. He's the commander of the jail, and he gets in the elevator. Don't want to go ahead and talk to visit or talk or anything with my girlfriend and this Judge LePage. He's going along with it, And I said, have you been tasering anybody recently, Levins? And he said, no, not for a couple years. I said, 5 years, you know, I said, 4 years, you know, let me see. I said, 3 years or 5 days to be exact. And, you know, he looked sort of abashed. And, you know, Levins has some, you know, I mean, I used to go ahead and talk to Copeland, and, you know, Copeland whined that he was, you know, the sheriff. I'm just I'm just going ahead and enforcing the law, and I'd go ahead and point out that the Supreme Court said that I had a right to a law library, that I had a right to a notary public, and, well, screw the law. I don't care what the law says. I said, well, I thought you were just enforcing it. And, oh, you know, he'd go ahead and read me Romans chapter 13, and I'd read him 2 Kings chapter 8, 9, and 10, dealing with what General Jehu did to the house of Ahab. And, no, they usually came on second. When I got, you know, back the second time, I still had my jumpsuit with the blood, and I went ahead and made a motion that this jumpsuit should be kept. And instead it was the evidence was pretty well taken away. So Don Hunt is the at the time he was the assistant transportation officer to this Robert Sullivan, and I'd had some run-ins with Robert Sullivan. You know, he's just another evil pig. But Sullivan retired, and now Don Hunt is the head of transportation. And he told me,
well, not according to what they told me. They said Don Hunt is in some sort of part-time reserve position.
Okay, well, at the time, you know, when my teeth were knocked out on December 6th at 7:12 a.m. At this Express Mart, and what gets me is that there are a number of people who've seen this thing happen, and it's not a matter of I tripped. Well, I did trip, but I tripped because he shoved me harshly twice on the right shoulder, and the first time, even with that bad hip, you know, I managed to go ahead just as I was gaining my momentum. He pushed me the second time, and yeah, I did trip over the curb on the sidewalk and fell straight on my face. And being shackled, you know, you can't protect your face here. I mean, my nose.
That has a ring of truth to it, big time. Listen, I asked
it
him.
It doesn't matter.
Listen, you won me on that. I asked Levins. I said, is Lindstedt all mouth? And he said, yep, you are.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm quite sure Levins will scream a different tune. See,
yeah.
Pigs.
I'm just telling you what he said.
Well, they do say that, and yes, you're a legend in your own mind. But the thing about it is that yes, they are. You know, they are quite, you know, scared of me. I have told pigs. You know, in fact, on November 12th of 2004, there was this pig named Greg Sweeten. His daughters were there, and I told his daughters that you are going to have to be skinned alive and raped because of what your dad did to go ahead and destroy my family. You know, I have a little girl your age, and she's been taken away. And the price that you must pay for the crimes of your father is to be sent screaming, to be skinned alive, to be raped. You have no right to live. Your family has no right to live. And what happens is daughter starts screaming and crying, you know, Sweeten was scared, and there was another pig named Flaherty. He used to be a little bully and was in Don County. They wanted to go call pigs here and Maceby and all this sort of thing. And I said, hey, you don't want this thing to become part of the public record. And the little bastard said, I see you're dead. You know, he was fucking the horse. I said, pig? You know, you have some there? I said, hey.
What I'm really trying to figure out.
I hate, you know, the thing about it is the pigs, They're just like George Bush. They're like any other criminal. They think that after they destroy the social order, they destroy the rule of law, that rule of law, the residuals of that will be there to protect them. And the fact of the matter is, just like my hero, Felix Dzerzhinsky, you know, I mean, when you're talking about legal, and I want to talk about Felix Dzerzhinsky and how he went ahead and legally exterminated 260,000 regime criminals and their family, And essentially what it boils down to is that Levins will confess to anything I want him to confess, including stuff he didn't do. But what he's done, I mean, he tortures prisoners with tasers. He's done it twice that I know of. You know, once that I pretty well seen the end of it. And I wasn't too crazy about that nigger named Overton. But on the other hand, in fact, I tried to help that nigger file a federal lawsuit. And, you know, just like every other nigger, he just sort of thinks, you know, he was whining that I wasn't good enough. I wasn't a good enough lawyer. And I found out that he went ahead and just dismissed the cases against Cooper. But, you know, he actually liked Newton County Jail better than he liked the Texas prison systems. But, you know, he was kept there for years when he should have been tried within 120 days. And essentially they were offering to go ahead and let him off on a burglary charge. But, hey, what's
that? Have you ever seen the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson?
Yeah.
Do you recall that scene? Do you recall that scene where he goes into the tavern and he says, God save the king?
And, yeah. Well,
everybody turns and throws their daggers and knives at him, and they barely get out. Him and that French guy barely get out. And when they're on their bellies on the outside, the Frenchman says, that's not the sort of people we want fighting for us. Do you recall what the Patriots said?
Yeah, well, he said that's exactly the sort of people you want fighting for.
Yeah, I guess that's the kind of fucking person you are. Mad dog. A pastor.
Yeah. But
there's some people out there who like you. I just, you know, it's taken me a while to get to you. I've got to get another cold beer. It's only my second.
Go ahead, get another beer.
And let's listen to little Jimmy Dean while I do it.
Sure.
Big Bad John. You reckon Big Bad John be drinking in that tavern? Huh?
Well, supposedly it ended up to him killing the little WAP or something like, you know, little Cajun or something. So, I don't know. There's some people who probably shouldn't be handling liquor, but...
You know what? You know, I'm seeing that I had this saved. I expected it to start, and apparently because of all the fame associated with Jimmy Dean, it's been removed. Copyright, you know. You know, those people, let me just look real quick. If not, I'll fish something else up.
I could go ahead and sing Wigger Problem.
You can't, man. You can barely speak. Hell, I don't want you singing.
Well, I don't know. There's some people who like it. On the Movement Turd, usually about half the shows, I start with Dave Ball's Thinking Problem, but I turned it to, you know.
Here we go. I'll be right back.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much. He kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land, Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Then came the day at the bottom of the mine when a timber cracked and men started crying. Miners were praying and hearts beat fast, and everybody thought that they'd breathed their last except John. Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well, grabbed a sagging timber and gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone, Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
And with all of his strength, he gave a mighty shove.
I'll stop it there. Isn't it amazing how the brawn, the strength of so many white men can be tamed by just an idea of political correctness and Judeo-Christianity, and how ideas grasp white men who have the capacity to literally destroy all the races that are trying to destroy us right now because of ideas. Their minds are filled with shit.
Well, you're pretty well repeating after a fact what Robert Friend said a couple of times. I've read, you know, I'm quite a reader, and I read about what happened around the time of the end of Republican Rome, the days of Marius and Sulla, Julius Caesar, and then what happened under Augustus. And one of the favorite ones was Robert Graves's I, Claudius. And as a result of having been under good rule underneath Augustus and relatively benign rule under Tiberius Caesar, the ordinary Roman, by the time of Caligula, was not able to go ahead and bring about a resurgence in the Republic. And I'm sure that you've watched Ridley Scott's Gladiator, where you have Richard Harris as Marcus Aurelius talking about restoring a Republic of Rome. And by this time, the people were not able to go ahead and have a republic, any more than they're able to ever have a republic in Africa or China. And a democracy or a republic calls for a higher order of men. And as a result, we don't have a higher order of men. We're having a lower order of men. And as a result of what I call the Whigger factory or the Whigger edumacation factory, you end up turning out a bunch of Whiggers who essentially cannot and will not be able to go ahead and produce anything for themselves.
But, you know, there's a defect in the white there's a defect in the white game as well, because the founding fathers of this country, they didn't get the racial thing right, and it's been disastrous. It doesn't matter how good it might have been had they not imported the cheap labor and all the rest, but the big thing lacking is the anti-Jew, anti-nigger clause in the Constitution. The form of government necessarily, just like any system, it's dependent on a mechanism to protect itself. Well, whites necessarily have to have a mechanism to protect themselves from non-whites, and that includes Jews. And see, that's never happened before.
Have you ever read a man called Lothrop Stoddard?
No.
His master, you know, people bitch because he's a eugenicist and a colleague of Mason Grant. And most people turn, like Michael Crichton, bitching about eugenics, was his book with a provocative title, A Rising Tide of Color Against the Against White World Supremacy. But actually, Lothrop Stoddard said that, no, we should not have gone ahead and opened up China. We should not have gone ahead and bothered with Japan. And we should have gone ahead and left all these Oriental races who didn't know anything alone so that they would go ahead and continue to be weak. And he wrote that in 1920, after 15 years after the Japs beat the Russians, you know, in the Russian-Japanese War. And the Japs were talking about conquering Australia. And you know, he also said is that, no, the niggers should never have been ported. But his masterpiece, as far as I'm concerned, was something called The Revolt Against Civilization, the Menace of the Underman, where he pointed out that, you know, and a lot of people were wondering what he meant, and he wrote it about 4 years after the Bolshevik Revolution. He devoted a chapter to Jews and how they need to go ahead and be kept in their place, i.e. ghettoized and the rest. But what he pointed out is that every civilization has gone ahead and collapsed, every single one, and people were wondering whether the United States would go ahead and be the same. He pointed out that every society collapses for three different reasons. The first reason is that civilization is a lot harder to maintain than savagery and barbarity, and the ability of the people, you know, of this particular race to go ahead and maintain these ever-increasing hurdles, these ever-increasing demands, goes ahead and goes down. The second burden is that in a harsh living society under savagery and barbarianism, the well-to-do, about the only thing that they can have is their choice of mates, and you end up having the strong survive. Whereas when civilization, it goes ahead and allows the unfit, the weak, the perverted, the, you know, the weak of will and character and mind and body to breed and breed and breed and breed, and eventually they go ahead and breed out the superiors. And the third item of his book was what he called atavistic revolt. And it would be led by anything other than people who were not inferior in terms of mind, or who were outsiders like Jews, or people who were dispossessed, or what he called misguided superiors. And many times, you know, his idea about misguided superiors going ahead and destroying, you know, what is a weakened social order sort of struck me, and I said, well, I'm not a misguided superior. This, you know, this regime needs to be destroyed.
I like the idea of a government, a system that brings together the brightest, the most beautiful, the strongest white woman and man to create offspring and to discourage all others from breeding. That would be a good thing. Let me stick my head out. I hear my dogs barking at something. One second.
Sure.
There's a guy about a half a mile from where I live, and he's got a mechanic shop and he rebuilds carburetors or something to do with race cars, and he will rev it up real high, and when he does that, sometimes my dogs start barking, but I never know what it is, so I'm very sensitive when they start barking. I want to know what they're barking at. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Okay. One thing that we are both going to agree with is that the current, you know, me, Harold Covington, probably you, is that under the current situation, if present trends continue, and Lothrop Stoddard, he went ahead and mentioned in his book in 1922, he went ahead and talked about the very first IQ test. The very first IQ test was used by the United States Army to go ahead and figure out which men it would go ahead and make officers. Now, Robert Friends said, and I think it's pretty well agreed, and, you know, IQ things, there's such a thing as standard deviation. The average white IQ now is about 98, but it used to be 100. But he said the ancient Athenians, who lived around the time of Pericles, actually had 120 IQ, the average, the average Athenian, and they were as much smarter, us people today, as what the average white is to the average nigger. And there's such a thing as called the bell-shaped curve. It was written in 1995, and it was written partly by a Jew, and it was written by Charles Murray, and there was a lot of discussion. But Lothrop Stoddard pre-anticipated in 1922, and he was saying that there's standard deviations, and 62% are within one standard deviation among whites, from 100 to about 85 IQ, and then the next standard deviation was from about 115 to about 130 or so, about 14%, and then there was another standard deviation of about 4.5, and then there were above that was a minuscule fraction who were super geniuses. And you have the same thing going on the white level, to where whites, you know, there are people who are, you know, much dumber. And if you get to below 70 IQ within a white, that's mental retardation, you know, severe mental retardation, you know. But then again, niggers in Africa usually have an average of 65 IQ. So blue gum niggers in Africa are, by definition, severely retarded. But in a low, you know, in something like Portugal, or, you know, even Portugal or something like that, it didn't really matter. But civilization requires more and more and more intelligence. And as a result of this, you know, factor number two, to where the base expands and the top dies out, you have fewer and fewer and fewer competent people to go ahead and run things. And that is exactly what is happening to our civilization.
Yeah, yeah. That,
but regardless,
that resonates, that what you
say
there.
Regardless, yeah. even whites as a race, Covington, you know, suggests that by the year, if current conditions continue, by the year 2100, the last pure white baby will be born sometime then. And things are getting worse and worse and worse. Now, I don't agree that things will continue the way they are, because they simply cannot continue the way they are. Now, what I wanted to go ahead, and people go ahead, and in many cases in this movement, they are continually looking for a great man on a white horse that's going to go ahead and save them from the necessity of going ahead and overthrowing the current regime and replacing it with a neo-aristocracy, you know, like Lothar wanted in that book. He called for a neo-aristocracy. Him and Madison Grant and Margaret Sanger went ahead and helped pass the 1924 immigration, to where, guess what, they had the quota system to where, hey, no, you know, there are no beaners there were hardly any beaners in 1890. You know, we're not allowing any immigration from Mexico, but hey, if you want to come from England, come on over. You want to come from Sweden, come on over. You want to come from Norway, come on over. You want to come from Africa? Nope, we don't want you. You want to, you know, and it was deliberately aimed at these anarchist, you know, Ashkenazi Jews like Emma Goldman, who got deported. And it was aimed to go ahead and cut down on the flow of Sicilians and Romanians and Eastern Europeans, but it was especially aimed at Jews. And, we got turned in 1965 by Ted the Swimmer Kennedy. But they tried to go ahead and save what was going on. Now, Benjamin Franklin said this Constitution was an experiment, and, you know, somebody said, well, what kind of government have you given us? And Benjamin Franklin was supposed to have said, a republic, if you can keep it. But in this movement, there are all these people who, when it comes down to it, they're not serious. They want to go ahead and sit on their ass and hope that a great white leader, be it David Duke or somebody else, and they hear David Duke, and, you know, that's where most of the money for Stormfront comes. It comes from what I call the geezer gelt, and it comes from the wigger mites, of them going ahead and, you know, giving a little bit of sustaining membership and hoping that David Duke is somehow going to save them by whining about Jews or whining about Zog or whining about this or whining about that. And they look upon people like me, who, you know, as a religious extremist or as a nutcase, by saying this current situation is doomed. And even if it isn't, it needs to be destroyed in order to go ahead and save us. Now, what I wanted to talk about tonight was Christian identity and dual seedline Christian identity and its role within the movement, and pretty well, you know, my view and how I'm working at it to go ahead and achieve, well, decentralization has really already occurred. And pretty well, I want to talk about dual seed line and how it is actually the main religion of the movement. But then again, the vast majority of the movement is already covered. I wanted to go ahead and cover what one of your guests, you ended up, and I listened to the interview you had with Dr. Jim Lind of Fourth Generation Warfare. And when I was in Nuthouse, I had people print print his columns out, and I read them. They were a great deal of comfort for me. But essentially,
who was that now?
William Lind. You had him, yeah. And he talked about fourth generation warfare.
Every now and then, there's a break. It cuts off, you know, because of
Skype.
Okay,
yes, I noticed that. Dr. William Lind, you had him last year, I believe, as a guest, and he talked about fourth generation warfare and neocons and Jews, and I went ahead and listened a couple times to that show. You had him as a guest.
Okay.
He was talking about fourth generation warfare.
To be honest, I don't remember it, but I've interviewed so many people. Dual seed line Christianity. What is that?
Okay. Christian identity holds that white people, you know, Aryan Nordic white people, are descended from, are descended from the quote lost. Well, most people think 10, but it was actually 13 tribes of the House of Israel. In 721 to 719 B.C., I said A.D., but it was B.C., an Assyrian king went ahead and besieged Israel and Judea, and not only took away the, quote, 10 tribes of the House of Israel, but actually all 13, because you read in the book that what he didn't take was the people who were locked up in Judea, in Jerusalem, and five other cities. And they didn't take those people, and those five other cities was in Judea. But they ended up taking a lot of rural Judeans, they took a lot of Benjamites, they took a lot of Levites, and they took the other 10 tribes, and they became the, quote, lost 10 tribes of Israel. They were deported. The Assyrians, they did just like Joseph Stalin and a number of other empires of the day. They would take troublesome people and go ahead and uproot them from their home and deport them all the way to the other end of the empire. And Palestine, the Assyrians did not conquer Egypt. In the land of Canaan, was on the southwest corner of the Assyrian Empire. They deported them to the northeast corner, and they took a people called the Kaphians and put them where the Israelites used to be, and they later became known, as the Samaritans. So when you hear the story of the Good Samaritan, you're talking about people who were not Jews or Judeans, but actually these people called Kaphians. Now, the Israelites had already gone ahead and...
Remember exactly where you're at, okay? I'm going to interrupt you now. Remember exactly where you're at, and I'll let you pick back up there. You know, anytime somebody starts talking about, the Samaritans and the theologians, and Timothy did that, and Paul went over there, and all, it's a bunch of goddamn gobbledygook as far as I'm concerned. And we live in a gobbledygook world as far as I'm concerned. My view of leadership has to do with just fiery spirit, and I'll just cut through all the bullshit and say, God and Jesus are talking to me, darling, and I'm driven and I'm inspired by the holy word of God. God and Jesus are telling me what to do, and God and Jesus are telling me to run them fucking niggers and Jews out of this goddamn country. That's the way to do it. Now, all this gobbledygook, that's what the kind of world we live in. The Judeo-Christian gobbledygook is reigning now. All right, I just had to get that in. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I heard you say that before, and to me, my response is that in order to make your gobbledygook far more believable, it sometimes pays to have an actual theological underpinning behind it. For all this talk about Judeo-Christianity being the religion of the West, from the Creators and the rest of these people, the actual, and I went ahead and wrote an article called The Cult of the Me-God, and the actual religion of most Whiggers is what's called solipsism. The actual belief that the only thing that matters is you, yourself, alone. Now, when Matt Hale got railroaded, there was this guy named Hardy Lloyd, Hardy Lloyd, I'm not quite sure who he was, and he went ahead and claimed to be the you know, the new Pontifex Maximus, and a lot of people didn't like that. So then he claimed to be, Woden's only living prophet. Wags went ahead and said that lived. And he went ahead, he went away from Odinism, and he got to where, what it boils down to is that the Reverend Mongoloid Hardy, I'm Mongoloid because his name was Lloyd Hardy, I called him Mongoloid Hardy. Mongoloid Hardy decided to go ahead and cut through the bell priest and the middleman and just decided to go ahead and just worship himself. And that is what most people do, is just that they, you know, unlike Mongoloid, they don't have the craftsmanship to do it. Now, Last April, poor old Mongoloid, what Mongoloid did is he gloated, it was in May. Mongoloid went ahead and gloated that he got away with murdering this middle-aged cougar. He was going ahead and cheating around on his wife or something here, and he met a 41-year-old woman on the internet. And he went ahead and he shot her. He just, for whatever reason, he went ahead and shot her dead. Shot her right dead through the face. And he was one of these what we call Asperg lords. You know, they supposedly have autism or Asperger's or something like that. And they're referred to as Asperg lords. And he spent 4 years in the nut house. And his daddy was a rich Pittsburgh surgeon. And he hired some real good lawyers. And for some reason, that bastard got away with murder. And on April 4th of last year, some little Polack kid named Poplowski was convinced that Zog Obongo was going to take his guns, and he went ahead and shot three pigs, pop, 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 in about 30 seconds in Pittsburgh, and then held them off with an AK-47. He was in jail, and Mongoloid Hardy, he gets on his little internet radio show and gloats about how everybody ought to kill more pigs and do all this sort of shit, so... They went ahead and searched, searched his office and put him in jail, probably in a different cell than the Poplowski kid. But last I heard, I'm betting, I haven't heard anything from him since. They took down his webpage, and he's locked up. I bet he's locked up in the nut house. But as a young man of about 24, 26, he looked like a super wigger. So I have a little sock puppet that I call John Q. Wigger. And I use Hardy Lloyd's picture of when he looked like a total wigger doofus as a little avatar picture. And I call my sock puppet and I say, the world ought to thank us wiggers because, even though we're related to the white man, I have another, character named White Man. He's a Christian identity guy. And it says, the world ought to thank us wiggers for saving the world from the white man. And every white man has more than a little bit of wigger in him. And essentially when I want to say something really freaking stupid, I go ahead and use my John Q. Wigger sock puppet. But, the point of the matter
that,
is...
That wigger, I envision that wigger being unacceptable in the days ahead. that's going to pass by the side, and anybody who goes there, they risk their life. That's the world I see coming.
Well, the world that you see coming, do you see an economic and financial and social collapse?
Yeah.
And a civil war ahead. Okay, well then we're already very much on the same page, Jim. I mean, we both see it now. Whether I want to call it, as Christian Denny wants to do, call it a great tribulation, or you want to call it a great collapse or a great die off, it doesn't in many ways really matter. But by going ahead,
it does matter. The words a leader uses to gather together that hardcore nucleus—that's the way it necessarily has to work. You can forget about any kind of mass movement. I mean, initially, any kind of mass effort, any kind of movement must necessarily begin with a nucleus. Hitler explained. Somebody sent me a quote by Hitler, and that quote. Let me just bring it up real quick and read it now. This is what has to be figured out by someone. One second. Let me get it in front of me. Okay, here we go. Quote, I laid down the line to take, although there were those who warned me. Quote, you won't win many supporters like that. Close quote. But I didn't want them all I wanted to win over a particular nucleus from the public, the nucleus that is hard as nails. I didn't want the others. That is why I set up my fighting manifesto and tailored it deliberately to attract only the toughest and most determined minority of the German people at first. When we were quite small and unimportant, I often told my followers that if this manifesto is preached year after year in thousands of speeches across the nation, it is bound to act like a magnet. Gradually, one steel filing after another will detach itself from the public and cling to this magnet. And then the moment will come when there will be this minority on the one side and the majority on the other. But this minority will be the one that makes history, because the majority will always follow where there's a tough minority to lead the way. Close quote, Adolf Hitler. So words do matter. We simply don't have any genuine bona fide leaders out there even attempting to attract a hardcore nucleus. That's where we're at.
Okay, well, lots of starters said the same thing, you know, in his book about how it is not the majority which determines anything, but rather a determined minority which knows its own mind, and by the fact of it knowing its own mind and the majority not knowing its own mind, the majority always loses, beaten even before it goes ahead and proceeds. And Lewis Beam wrote an article called Revolutionary Majorities, where he pointed out that in the American Revolution, less than 8,000 British redcoats, you know, be it Hessians, whatever, lost their lives. But it was determined by a small percentage of patriots who used terrorism, well, what we would call terrorism today, to go ahead and kill and run off and tar and feather tax collectors and Tories and the rest. Lossop Stoddard went ahead and pointed out that in actuality, an A to B plus level intelligence is around 5%. And Robert Friends said the same thing, is that there's only 1 out of 20 whites who have really natural, inborn, inherent leadership skills. And the people who go ahead and use it are very well rewarded. Now, most of our leadership, our elites, are pretty well bought and paid for and paid off to go ahead and protect the system, which goes ahead and gives them plenty of perks. Now, in this particular ballot movement,
I think of Fox Fallon and what's the Marine general's name? Zini, Anthony Zini. They've been bought off.
Well, yeah. Well, they're all in order to go ahead and be bought off.
What would happen if either one of those men or both of them were to announce tomorrow that we don't like the way this fucking country's going, and by God, we're gonna start fucking leading because we spent our entire lives learning how to lead people, and we're fucking tired of seeing this shit happen in this country. We're tired of seeing our borders just fucking open. We're tired of all these goddamn niggers robbing and raping and killing. We're tired of these endless fucking foreign wars. We're tired of all our goddamn economy being shipped to China so a few corporate executives can be fucking millionaires. You know, it'd get real fucking interesting if somebody, you know, even below them, Mike Yon told me, feel great officers. What if we had some feel great officers that started, you know, working on that hardcore nucleus, because they don't give a fuck. That is, they're not bought off. They're genuinely men of honor, integrity, and they're going to say, follow me, in a way that kind of resonates without, you know, I don't know what I am, but you get somebody out there who's trying to attract a hardcore nucleus in that vein. You got that bitch, Sarah Palin, out there. She's supposed to be some kind of fucking answer. And you got to, you know, I was listening to some Christian Identity conference group. The other guy, some guy was in that conference, that group, and I like that other boy, that Cambridge boy, but he was talking about patriot bullshit, that it's all about the Constitution. Fuck that!
Well,
you know, somebody...
Well, I mean, you still have that. But you've never been in the military. I've been in the military, and the fact of the matter is that your second lieutenants, your first lieutenants, are mainly ROTC officers. And if they're from the South Hudson Institute of Technology, i.e. West Point, they're even worse. They're already been educated away to go ahead and believe in that. And by the time, you know, I mean, if you want to make general, you can't say stuff like that.
Forget the general. We're talking field grade officers.
Field grade officers. What happens is that the most common rank in the military is lieutenant colonel. And there's not enough battalions for all these lieutenant colonels. And usually by the end of 20 years, they've gone ahead and, the fact of the matter is, as like McGuire said, is that there's a shortage of company grade officers. There's companies which are commanded by first lieutenants and a lot, but generally your average officer is an ROTC, character who got paid. He went through college. He's already been brainwashed to loving the system and supporting the system. So you're not going to find it among the junior officers. You're not going to go ahead and find it among the senior enlisted because they wanted to go ahead and get their pensions. And they had to endure all these SSERs and officer efficiency reports. And you're not really going to go ahead and get among your field grade officers from major, lieutenant colonel and to bird colonel. And the thing about it is that at about the end of 20 years, they go ahead and give the lieutenant colonel a chance to see how well he does with the battalion and then decide whether or not he's going to go ahead and command a brigade or whatever, be a full grade. And then there's still a jump from the from lieutenant colonel to colonel, and then from colonel to get your first star, to be a brigadier general. There is a leap, and you have two big hurdles, and the vast majority of officers do not make those hurdles. But in any case, you end up you're not going to go ahead and get any leadership from the military any more than the late Roman empire did from their military. What ended up happening is that all these German barbarians were the ones that went ahead and took over. But within this Bowel movement,
let me just comment about that. I think the in general, if we were at in peacetime, what you say would be 100% accurate. And to some degree, it's even accurate during the war, the wars that are going on now, or rather, the war in Afghanistan principally. But because there are hot places on the ground in Afghanistan now where men are losing their lives and they are engaged in a struggle for survival, that forges a kind of a spirit that only, I assume, a hot war can forge in a person, and it could result in officers, field grade officers or NCOs, coming back from that war with the right kind of attitude, and they wouldn't be lieutenant colonels or RCO, what's that?
Senior non-commissioned officers. The fact of the matter is, your average senior NCO is a nigger.
But clearly there would be, the people up on the front lines doing the fighting in Afghanistan now, I think the majority of them are white boys. And I think
they are. In your special forces, there are quite a few. I mean, it's 96-97%. But the fact of the matter is, it's not your Spec 4, it's not your PFC, it's not your corporal who goes ahead and determines policy. Now, there was the Austrian corporal who ended up determining policy, and there was the Corsican corporal who went ahead and determined policy. But in today's military culture, they become a lot harder men because, after about four or five IED explosions, you end up going ahead, maybe learning something, but what you don't learn is how to go ahead and move entire divisions or brigades or anything all you're learning is how to go ahead and save your own life and maybe that of your buddies, you know, if you're smart. The people who are on the hot, you know, front line, they're not the ones who ever go ahead and get to determine anything. It's not General Petraeus. It's not any of those people who are fighting on the front lines.
I'm not arguing that, but I've been out at this long enough that I fully recognize that there's military talent out there, and they know how to fucking lead. I have no doubt about it, irregardless of what you just said. Make no mistake about it. There are military leaders in our country right now and in Afghanistan who know how to fucking lead.
They know how to lead. Here's a common thing here, is that the armed forces are 10,000 killers and the rest is nothing more than a Job Corps in uniform. The thing about it is that the 10,000 killers are not the ones who are determining policy. If they did go ahead, even, you know, I've been in the military, and you know, this was a nuclear missile battalion, which was a mixture of the creme de la creme and the absolute dregs, like the like the cooks and the mechanics or something like that. And the thing about it is that I used to go ahead, when in my cups, I'd used to go ahead and tell my little brother stories about what I'd seen in the Army. And my little brother said, "Hey, is this country safe?" And I said, "Well, it's as safe as long as we're facing the Russians. I mean, it's not like we're facing the SS or anything like that." And that was the Russian Army, and every single army has its own problems. The vast majority of people who are in the Army are pretty well a herd of people who cannot make it in the outside world, and they are not really guerrilla fighters or anything like that. But let's go ahead and leave aside our differences about where revolutionary leadership will come from. In this particular bowel movement, and I went ahead and wrote a piece, is that it's sort of like differentiating between Italians and then the people who are sort of affiliated with the mafia, and then your made men who are in the mafia who might be, less than 500, and then your supreme mafia leaders who are less than, 5 or 10 or 20, who are the godfathers. You only have a couple godfathers. You might have maybe 500, 1,000 mafia soldiers. Then you'll end up having a bunch of criminals who are hanging around for the scraps. And then you have overall the Italians. The same thing is with this bowel movement. See, everybody in the bowel movement knows, recognizes me, and I know and recognize them, and we end up not really liking each other, and everybody has something derogatory to say about each other. But getting to Christian identity, what I see is that I've talked to a number of them, they end up having what I would refer to as heresies, but it doesn't really matter. You end up having, and I sort of think that it's sort of like the analog to Elijah's day, whereas you had 7,000 men who had not bowed their knee to Baal in a population of 3 million. I sort of think that in a population of 300 million, that you probably have 700,000 who have been exposed to the Christian identity message and who have not bowed their knee to Baal. And as a result of Butler's personally disastrous plan, you end up having these people locked up into their own small 1, 2, and 3 family congregations who do not want to go ahead and expose themselves. And pretty well my policy, and I'm working on it, is, my first policy was to go ahead and set up a list server and set up a website to where I could go ahead and preach whatever I want without any censorship, because I've had a web page since 1996.
How long are your sermons?
Well, what happens is that usually I go ahead and write about everything, and usually my sermons are basically political sermons where I go ahead and talk about what's going on. Within the last year or so, I've gone ahead.
So your sermons are not, they're, it's oratory. You speak to people, and are they only 2 or 3 families? How big is your church?
Well, what happens is that, sort of, I ask how many Christian identity people are. I mean, I would say that there's probably millions of them. You know, if you're talking about how many people I actually affect, the answer is I don't know. And that was one of the things I did when in the 1990s, in that I did not want to know who was talking to me. If they went ahead and sent a sensitive message here, which would get them in trouble, I would go ahead and take the email. I would go ahead and do a cut and paste, and then I would delete the message. In some cases, it was very sensitive. I would go ahead and defrag the hard drive. Now, the thing about it is that I was pretty well a conduit of information, and I explained is that, you know, by doing that, I sort of ended up acting for Lewis Beam and David Lane through his wife, Katja Lane. And, you know, essentially, I'm talking about that, you know, above ground movement, there are very, 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 very few people actually who are doing anything. And most of them are what I call Zogbots or agent provocateurs who are accepting Zog money and who are preaching the Zog message. And, you know, my, you know, the first thing I did way back in 1996, I realized, like Ezra Pound, who I think I talked about, Ezra Pound said that he could not get his first-rate stuff, his second-rate stuff, his third-rate stuff. He could maybe get his fourth-rate stuff published as long as it wasn't political. Well, with the Internet, you know, I discovered the same thing that David Duke and Don Black did, is that you can go ahead and create your own private media. And I used to publish, some of these resistance writers, and still do. And, you know, a number of them have been harassed and run off, you know, like Alex Curtis and Luke Lavellian. But I have published Eric Thompson. And, you know,
do you have his phone number?
Eric Thompson, A, does not have a phone, and B, Eric Thompson does not want a phone. I mean, he has mentioned that a couple times to where he does not want to endure the tyranny of having a phone. So the thing, about the only way I could go ahead and say something to do would if you go ahead and mail him off to his box, 898 Yakima, Washington, and see if you couldn't set up for a interview or somebody in darkest Yakima to go ahead and
take a cell phone over there to him.
Well, I don't think you're going to travel all the way to Yakima. But
so how could I interview him then?
I don't know. You'd end up having to go ahead and set it up, you know, personally with him, and by going ahead, and I would say the only way to do it would be to go ahead and write him a letter in Yakima, Washington, to go ahead and set it up, because he is very prickly. That not only, you know, it's a point of pride to him that he does not have a computer. That he does not even have an electronic typewriter. He has a manual typewriter, he'll have you know, and that he knows how to go ahead and manually re-ink those ribbons that he can no longer buy.
I wonder how he sounds. Have you ever heard him speak?
No, nobody's ever heard him speak.
That would be real important in what I do here, audio. Somebody can get a wrong idea about you because of the way you speak.
I don't really. Well, what happens is people, like I said before, it depends on what side you are as to what you believe. But with the thing about it is the first thing I set up is I had a web page, and portions of it were, you know, especially dealing with my problems and the other things. Some portions of them were deleted, and I lost a web page or two. And that has happened. I mean, somebody dropped a nickel on PastorLinstead.org and got me kicked off of HostMonster. I'm pretty good idea who did it. But and I'm going to go ahead and get PastorLinstead.org up. But
all right, let's take care of some business right now that I'm still in as direct a manner as we possibly can. Let's cover dual seedline Christian identity. Do that.
Okay.
Do that.
All right, here we are, and the Israelites have been deported to northeast Assyria. Now, the land of Palestine didn't really, you know, it was a bridge, you know, it's on the bridge between Europe, you know, Asia and Africa. And it was a strategic place because, you know, in order to go ahead and get to the ports of the Mediterranean, in order to go ahead and, you know, oversee a land army, you end up having to go ahead and have control of the land of, well, the Romans call it Palestine after the Philistines, but, you know, it's called the land of Canaan. And what happens is that supposedly, I think you've heard of Armageddon, which means Armageddon. Megiddo has the distinction of being the place, you know, the one place in the world which has seen the most battles, all the way from, you know, prehistoric times to when Ramses II had a little run-in with the ancient Hittite Empire. It's supposedly the place where the most battles in the world have been fought. And the reason of it is you end up having a road leading through certain valleys, and it was, you know, it was a choke point. And that's where the land of Canaan was at. And it was fought over by the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, and the Turks, and everybody else. There's been a lot of fighting in and around that area. But because it couldn't support so many people, you end up having certain people go ahead who are younger sons, you know, who didn't, you know, couldn't inherit. If you had seven sons, you know, and just one small farm, you couldn't go ahead, and he had to make his fortune. And as a result, they would migrate. The ancient Trojans, Judah's youngest son, Perez, one of his sons was called Darda, who gave his name to the Dardanelles, you know, between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean Ocean. And he went ahead and founded Troy. And you also had the Spartans, who were descended from the Judeans. And the Danites, supposedly some of them didn't have to go ahead and wander in the wilderness, you know, under Moses, because they were just going ahead and boating around. You know, they became known as the Phoenicians. Some of them were Canaanites, but a lot of them were not. And, Britain, Joseph of Arimathea, supposedly was the first bishop of Glastonbury. And the first church outside Israel was supposedly in Glastonbury, where the Christian church was, founded soon after. And there's a lot of people who believe that Jesus Christ spent his, quote, missing years from the age of 12 to the age of 30 in Great Britain. So, you know, Christian identity holds that the, quote, Nordic, Aryan people, you know, the true Semites or Shemites, are descended from the Israelites. And it wasn't just these people who got deported. Well, after they got deported, they became known as the Scythians and the Cymri and the Sumerians, you know, the stuff you read when you read Conan the Magnificent Barbarian or something like that. And they were named after Ahab's father, Omri. They were called the Cymri, or people of, Omri. And they became known as the Massangetai, or the Greater Geats, and your smaller Geats. I think I mentioned it, you know, about being in Beowulf. In any case, Christian identity holds, that
Pastor,
white Aryan people...
Pastor, did you hear that gasp of exasperation in your voice just now?
Well, I guess I might be fat. I don't know. I don't know if I heard a gasp of... I guess I didn't hear my own gasp of that, exasperation.
But my point is, even if you... And so you're describing something I would assume supposed to be very important to you. And yet, just a minute ago, I heard you agree with Hitler that a hardcore nucleus is essential, that you have to minority. My question is, do you think your discussion here about dual line Christianity is a way to attract a hardcore nucleus?
It is and it isn't. I wanted to go ahead and cover what Christian identity is, and then cover the difference between dual seed line. I know it's boring to
Anything that's boring, in my opinion, is not the way to attract those filings like a magnet. It's got to be red hot fucking fire.
All right, well, let me. You know, Christian identity holds that the white Nordic Aryan people are descended from the tribes of Israel, from Abraham, Isaac, and then to Jacob, Israel. In any case, that's mainstream Christian identity. Now, in the 1840s, around the same time Mormonism was arising, they come up with what they call British Israelitism, and started in Britain, and pretty well they went ahead and rediscovered or rebelieved that white people were British Israelitism. And probably the biggest church was Herbert Armstrong's Worldwide Church of God, and I grew up in it from the age of 12, on up. And that was probably the biggest denomination. Now, Herbert Armstrong ended up disfellowshipping his son, Garner Ted, and he ended up giving it to these Jews named Joseph Tkach, and Joseph Tkach gave it to Joseph Tkach Jr., and as a result, the Worldwide Church of God is splintered up into probably about 100 factions or so. But in its prime, in the 70s, and Herbert Armstrong made the mistake of saying that 1972, everybody, the church was going to go to Petra for the place of safety from the Great Tribulation, and that lost a bunch of people. But in its prime, it had 156,000 people attending its various Feasts of Tabernacles. And this area in southwest Missouri was one of the strongholds of the Loyalists. And about the same time, British Israelitism, metamorphosized through from a guy named Gerald L. K. Smith, who was an aide of Huey Long, and I know you've heard of Huey Long. And pretty well around in the 40s, along came a man named Wesley Swift, and pretty well instead of Jews being part Judean, like the British Israelites believed, they were the literal spawn of Satan. Now, your early church sounds a lot like, like Tertullian. The rest sounds a good deal like Christian identity. But Wesley Swift went ahead and changed it to where, if you take a world religions class and you're learning about Judaism, they will not tell you. They will not tell you anything about Jews being divided up into about 85% what they call Ashkenazi or Eastern European Jews, and what they call the Sephardic Jews, who were from the southern Mediterranean, mainly Spain, where they got expelled in 1492.
I've got a simpler approach. I'm now saying niggers just simply have, Jews have. Nigger blood in them. So,
well, you would like this dual seed line Christian identity heresy from Pastor Willie Martin. He died in 2003. But anyway, dual seed line. I'll come to that. Dual seed line holds that most people, and I go ahead and tell them as a wayfaring part, is that Jews have no right to the land of Israel because they're actually nothing more than Khazars who converted to Talmudic Judaism in 745 under King Bulan. And there was a Khazar Empire, and
I don't really care if they take all of... I don't care if they kill every last Palestinian in the whole world as long as they do it with their blood and treasure. I don't care what they do.
All right. But I'm pretty well covering in that there's some people who think that, anyway, a bridge between one seed line and dual seed line is, the existence of Khazars, who became the Ashkenazi Jews, who are 85% of world Jews. And the Ashkenazi Jews treat the Sephardic Jews, who were expelled from Spain in 1492 by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, they treat them like crap because they've been intermixed with the Arabs quite a bit. But dual seed line holds that the Jews are the literal spawn of Satan, that the non-whites, the Chinese who are not mentioned anywhere in the Bible, the Orientals, the niggers are mentioned as the beasts of the field, the Redskins, you know, the Indians are not mentioned at all in the Bible either. And essentially they were created on the sixth day, and that they are the beasts of the field. And under, you know, under Bertrand Comperé, Yahweh rested on the seventh day, and on the eighth day he created Adam altogether, and then he went ahead and created Eve. And that's pretty well orthodox dual seed line Christian identity, and it was pretty well set by 1967 under Bertrand Comperé. And they got, you know, someone was asking, where do you find all about this? It's probably the Kingdom Identity Ministries AIT course, which costs $100, but Mike Hallamore has not been doing a good job of keeping it up.
I finally figured out that Jews simply hate white people and they're killing us.
It's called Genesis 3:15. When in the Garden of Eden, pretty well they're finding out who ate the forbidden fruit. Well, dual seed line holds the forbidden fruit was Eve having sex with Satan and giving birth to Cain, who was the world's first Jew. Now, getting to Willie Martin, this is a heresy you love. Willie Martin's heresy said is that Cain disguised himself as a nigger and he had sex with Eve. And what happens, that's why Jews and niggers like screwing each other, because the Jews and the niggers are just trying to get back to their ancient roots. And
makes sense.
I told this during at the jail. He's under Levins. He said, "Well, I am married to a negress and I'm part Jew," and I went ahead and told him the Willie Martin heresy, and he was not thrilled to hear about, how he was indeed not only part Jew but part nigger as well. And he did not, neither Jews or niggers like the Willie Martin heresy for some reason. And that's why I go ahead and repeat it to him whenever possible.
Well, repeat it one more time. It was so good I'd like to hear it again.
The Willie Martin heresy is not only Satan had sex with Eve, but what happens is that Willie Martin went ahead and, just like an incubus, which is the male inverse of a succubus, Satan turned himself into a nigger and waved his little, waved his big old wanger in front of Eve, and Eve was a big old slut and screwed Satan. And what happens gave birth to, Cain, who was the world's first Jew. And anybody with Jew genetics will say that even the blondest Jew has 5 to 15% nigger marker genes. So when Jews and niggers marry each other, like J.J. Johnson married Nancy Lord, the libertine Jew, I say, well, hey, J.J., he's just, J.J. and Nancy, they're just going back to the roots, back in the Garden of Eden.
They're going back to their roots.
When you say roots here, that sort of means something to niggers. So, generally, Jews and niggers, for some reason, don't like me repeating the Willie Martin heresy, and Turing didn't much care for it either.
Well, I'm all for us going back to our roots as well. There was somebody I interviewed from Iowa who explained the definition of radical had to do with roots, and that's what whites lack is radicalism. The Jews and the niggers have it. We don't. We've got to get it. We've got to acquire that radical outlook. That's essential. And the leaders out there must be about the business of molding the minds of white people to become radicals, strictly legal political radicals.
Okay, well we'll get to the strictly legal part if I have enough time. The thing about it is that dual seed line holds.
Pastor, let me tell you, I'm out of here at 11 o'clock, so you watch the clock. So whatever you want to say,
okay.
You got until 11 to say it.
Well, let me go ahead and cover is that dual seed line holds, and that there is a hatred, and Yahweh put it in. It's called Genesis 3:15. It's called, I will put enmity between your seed, the serpent's seed, and the woman's seed. And the serpent will bruise the woman's seed's heel, and the woman shall go ahead and bruise the serpent's head. And of all the rules of Yahweh passed, the only one that I've ever seen that Jews obey is Genesis 3:15. They hate the white man, and the white man is supposed to hate the Jew. So there is a, Genesis 3:15 enmity, and that is the first commandment of Yahweh between the Jew and the white man, is that they are supposed to hate each other, because the Jew is a literal spawn of Satan. He bears Satan's blood, and therefore there's no such thing as a good Jew. Every single Jew is the spawn of Satan, and therefore irredeemably evil, and they must be exterminated. Now, the only reason they're allowed to live is so that heaven will not be crowded up with wiggers. So, as a result of dual seed line Christian identity, every single Jew knows about Christian identity, especially hates dual seed line. And whenever I see anybody who shows me Genesis 3:15 empty, I assume that I'm talking to a Jew or a Mamzer or a Wigger who got a whole lot of lot of Jew to him. And that is why there is so much hatred toward Christian identity on the part of World Church of the Creator, which was founded by a Jew named Benny Klassen, who was a sort of homosexual Jew like Richard Barrett, in order to go ahead and get him plenty of skinhead mangina, as I call it. But there is a vast difference between the Christian identity and mainly dual seed line Christian identity and the the rest of the resistance, which I think is just pretty well just awash with Zog money, like Trader Galen Miller and Alex Linder and David Duke. Now, going on,
let me confirm one thing if I can. Don't you feel kind of silly having run for those big offices? Don't you wish you had run for your state house instead?
No. I mean, I ran this year for city councilman. I couldn't get elected city councilman. I did want to go ahead and cover that race. Thanks to Trader Glenn Miller, an openly white man is not allowed to run for political office in Missouri. I went up there to file for in 2000. I was begging Trader Glenn Miller to run for senator, and he wouldn't do it. In 2006, when I was in the Nut House, he deliberately went ahead and ran for Congress. He tried to run as a Democrat. They tried to run as a Republican. He tried to run as a Libertarian. And they, while I was in the Nut House and couldn't fight these people, they went ahead and refused his filing fee and gave it back to him. And what happens is that he went ahead and refused to go ahead and sue the political parties. He just sued Robin Carnahan, and he lost the lawsuit. He could have refiled it, but he refused to do it. And I'm pretty well convinced that Trader Glenn Miller deliberately went ahead and filed that so that if you're an open white man, you cannot run in the state of Missouri as an open white man. And Alex Linder is in on it too. And when I went up there to run for United States Senator, I was refused to be allowed to run on the Missouri Republican Party. And then I filed as a Libertarian, and 12 days later I was kicked off the ballot.
What about an independent?
I have a lawsuit against Obongo dating from Election Day, November 4th, 2008. And, pretty well I'm saying that I've been imprisoned in Nut House, and I want you to go ahead and do away with the revised statute of Missouri 115.355, because it allows you to go ahead and throw somebody in jail or a Nut House facing charges, just like they do in Russia, just like they do in China, just like they do in Iran, and thus keep people from running. And I want you to go ahead and do away with 115.357, to where they allow these political parties to go ahead and deny an open white man an ability to run. And when I was up there, I said that, look, this is established law. In 1944, this nigger named Lonnie B. Smith in Smith versus Allwright went ahead and asked to be allowed to vote in the Texas all-white primary. And there was a law which saying that you couldn't give a political primary ballot to a non-white. And the United States Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall, went ahead and said, hey, look, you cannot discriminate, political parties on the basis of race. Now, that happened in 1944, but thanks to Trader Glenn Miller, 62 years later, the white man is the new nigger. And I got it sitting in front, and they will not, the Jew judge will not allow the thing to be secret, and I've asked for a summary judgment on March 30th, and essentially I'm pointing out, this is the reason I go ahead and run for these political offices. is to go ahead and file an election lawsuit and then to lose that lawsuit so that the government says that there is no peaceful political situation. Us people of Christian identity, you know, a dual seed line, we don't want a political situation. We want a great tribulation, and we want 90% of the Whiggers and all the niggers and Jews to die in this civil war. So I deliberately run for these high offices in order to lose, but to go ahead and make a point that there are no such thing as free and fair elections. I'm going to go ahead and point out that the white man is the new nigger, because in 1944 they said that niggers got to vote and run in elections, but guess what? A white man in 2006, 2008, and 2010 is not allowed to go ahead and openly run for office as a federal candidate. And one of the things that supposedly founded this country is no taxation without representation. I want to go ahead and say, hey, look, white man, if you cannot vote, if you cannot be represented by a white man on any of the political party ballots for a federal office, therefore, there should be no taxation. Therefore, if you go ahead and become a member of my church, you will be given, an exemption from paying any federal taxes because you cannot go ahead and vote for an open white man. And, the point of these lawsuits is to go ahead and lose them and let the regime go ahead and lose legitimacy. So, since I'm not going to go ahead and be elected for a small, office, I might as well go ahead and lose for a big office, but go ahead and cast questions as to legitimacy of the election. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I get the gist. But let me ask you, why don't you run as an independent?
Like Trader Glenn Miller will get on the ballot? Shoot, he's on through about close to 5,000 votes here, or $5,000. He's going to get about, if he's lucky, he'll get 100 votes. Because the people, when he ran as a write-in candidate, he only got 23 votes. And most of them was from his area. The people who know Trader Glenn Miller are not going to elect him. Shoot, his son went ahead and murdered a Good Samaritan, and then he went ahead and had a shootout with a pig, and the pig killed him. He went ahead and murdered a 55-year-old man who tried to help him. That's the sort of character Trader Glenn Miller and Trader Glenn Miller's family is. I mean, they are literally the scum of the earth. And the people who know when I knew him, he was trying to suck up. He went to the Nashville convention trying to go ahead and get a seat there. And, I was pretending to be his buddy. And, I went ahead and told this Marvelline, all about him. And she said, no, we don't need that kind. I said, damn right you don't need that kind. And what happens is, even as late as 2008, he tries to go ahead and get his, he was trying to suck up to the Ron Paul people, but, the people that stumble in, the guy who runs it here, he's a Republican county party official, and he's pretty well kicked out the Trader Glenn Miller family from running around in Berry County. So, the people who know Trader Glenn Miller despise him. I mean, he's just a Zogbot. But the thing about it is there is no political situation. Now, in the case of, and I've been looking at this the same way with, Lawyer Steele. Zog is after him, and they're trying to go ahead and take him down. But I wanted to go ahead and bring that Christian identity, especially the dual seed line Christian identity within the movement, has pretty well furnished the vast majority of resistance soldiers and gunmen and the rest of them. I mean, even William Pierce was quite impressed with Christian identity. He was trying to go ahead and set up his own little sort of Christian identity knockoff in his novel Hunter. But the thing about it is that the Christian identity believer truly does believe, and therefore he is a fanatic. He is a fanatic in going ahead and bringing it about. And my goal, since I've been out of jail, is to go ahead and write what Christian identity is about, as opposed to letting Jews like Barkun in 1994 define us, and upgrade these 1, 2, and 3 family congregations from heresies and one seed lineism to the militant dual seed line Christian identity, is that the Jews are the spawn of Satan, they must exterminated, and that the niggers and muds must be driven out or exterminated, and that any Whigger who goes ahead and supports Zog must be exterminated, and the current regime must be destroyed. And my goal is to go ahead and have a decentralized mass. I think there's at least 700,000 of us, you know, scattered about. And to go ahead and take this 1 in 20, and I've been working since the start of the year on what I call the 10,000 Warlords Project, because I think there are a number of little Felix Dzerzhinskis and a bunch of little Adolf Hitlers and a bunch of little, you know, Mao Zedongs and a bunch of little Pol Pots who will go ahead and take control, and they will be the new warlords, and they will destroy this Zog as it goes ahead and continues. And you can't go ahead and do it under an above ground movement. It has to go ahead and be part of decentralization, you know, aka like fourth generation warfare, just like William Lind does. And pretty well, I'm working on the second thing. I want to form a Christian Identity News Network, and I've had early this year, I've had my own talk show radio show, which I call the Movement Turd, and pretty well every Sunday night I go ahead and tell what has gone on with the bowel movement, and I'm going to go ahead and take this interview and upload it to my talk show account, of course. And the idea is go ahead and radicalize and go ahead and find your warlords, but keep them underground. Now you're above ground.
They're underground. You don't have to worry about.
Well, they are deeply underground. Your average one seed liner.
It's ironic that you and I are at complete. We're going at it completely different. You're underground. You're advocating they stay underground. I'm trying to get them to come up above ground.
We did the same thing in the militia. I used to run two militias. And let me tell you, that's one thing I was going to go ahead and mention here. The last militia conviction was in 1999 when Zog was scared shitless. In 1999, I was invited to this Holy War Yahoo group. And over the years, the means of communication has changed. When it first came out, the very first one was email list servers. It cost about $100 to get a P.O. Box account. And it had, mail, listeners. Before that, you still have what is called the American Patriot, APFN, which used to be American Patriots Fax Network. And Lewis Beam and the rest of them used to go ahead and maintain fax networks and bulletin board services. After that, then you end up having what I call the Yahoo groups, which is called Juhu groups. And they, they bought this place called eGroups out for $1 billion. In 1999 or so. And then, for a couple of years, it was the Yahoo groups. And then around 2002, 2003, Stormfront went from having a web page to having the very first V-Bulletin forum. So now the average means of communication is the V-Bulletin or PHPBB forum, usually V-Bulletin. You said you ran a forum. Well, I ran a forum, too.
Yeah, I've ran people. Yeah, not very well. I'm glad my forum days are behind me.
Well, I run a forum, and there's a lot of people because, I have a lot of things to say on the movement, a bowel movement. Well, what does the bowel movement produce? It produces a turd. And but I do go ahead. I have a podcast, on Sunday nights called The Movement Turd on Talk Show. I might go ahead and form one on Blog Talk Radio called The Flush Rim Blow Show, to where I go ahead and discuss the news of the day. But in any case, what you end up having with a militia group, the first spies we end up, in the days of 1994, you end up having all these small rural militias pop up with about a dozen, maximum 20, and they were all white men, and almost always they were run by either a Christian identity or a Klan cadre. And over the years, the Klan has gone from being a Baptist or Methodist thing to where most of the Klans today, the majority of them are Christian identity. But in 1994, you know, up to March 1995, Janet Reno was going to round us all up, and then Oklahoma City occurred, and I was trying to go ahead and get people to go above ground. And on the 21st, 2 days after, I'm sitting here, you know, with this, my co-militia leader of this other militia in Carthage. I had one running out of Springfield, 24th. And all these people were coming. These survivalists were coming and saying, we're not going to go ahead and go above ground. And pretty well, the actual days of the old militia was finished off by Oklahoma City because, hey, Timothy Veigh was associated with the Nichols brothers of, the Michigan militia and the rest. In 1995, you end up having these suburban militias, you know, and they love niggers. Oh, we have a South Kansas City one, and you know I went up to the St. Louis Volunteers, and we have a Jew second command. Well, this Jewess, was she in the army? No. So why are you making her your second command? Oh, because she's a Jewess. Well, that's screwed up, and I met idiots here, and it was a big thing up until Oklahoma City, and then you end up having a whole bunch of agent provocateurs. And when you have an above-ground movement, you end up having agent provocateurs. You have your Trader Glenn Millers, you have your Alex Linders, you have your David Dukes, you have your Don Blacks, you have the rest of these people pretty well collecting money, you know, and what you call the white money movement, I call patriots, P-A-Y-T-R-I-O-T-S, or patriot idiots in some cases. And some of them, you know, some of them are just crooks. But, you know, and the crooks are not as bad as the, you know, agent provocateurs, like Trader Glenn Miller and the rest of them. They're the ones you ought to be scared of. You know, Bill White and the rest here. And I've worked since I got out of jail to run out of Christian Identity these, you know, these people who claim to be Aryan Nations who ain't even white and who ain't even Christian Identity. I've run them out, and I've run a bunch of people out. But generally, in, you know, the, you end up having all these, you know, all these people who would wind in, just like these two Missouri Highway Patrol. The very first meeting, one of them showed up, and I met him, was on April 23rd, the Saturday after Oklahoma City. And he went ahead, and he went ahead, and he did a lot of damage. But the damage he did was to the stupid Whigger element. He went ahead, he went ahead and rolled up the common law court, you know, movement in Missouri. That was, there was really all these old thieves who thought that by filing pieces of paper, they could get their farms back or whatever here. And what Zog has done is it's gone ahead and eliminated the stupid element, the stupid, you know, the element that thinks it can go ahead and have peaceful change. And, you know, pretty well, it's not able to go ahead and go with the militant, extremely dangerous, element that's there. I disbanded my militias here, and by this time there wasn't very much left of it. I just went ahead and disbanded it, except for the propaganda unit, which I run, by 1996 or 1997. And the last militia trial, you know, in the 90s was in 1999 when they were worried about this Y2 chaos coming up and lone wolves. But, you know, that's exactly what happened. They went ahead and destroyed Butler by taking away his farm, and they're doing the same to Edgar Steele. And Edgar Steele's, you know, mainly just a wigger whimper. He's just a pussy. He's just a, you know, he's just a yapper. And what they're doing is that they're getting away. They're going ahead with the people they can go ahead and destroy easily, like Butler and Edgar Steele, and they're getting away with really the most innocuous, and at the same time, they're whining and pissing and moaning about dangerous lone wolves and domestic terrorists who are organized as cells who they don't know anything about. But between 1999, you know, there was no militia convictions or, you know, prosecutions until what? You know, this March, when you end up having a bunch of idiots, you know, in the Huttery militia, about 10 Whigger yappers, you know, drunken yappers, and one federal informant, well, who's doing all the crap.
They're supposed to have still on tape recorded discussing the murder of his wife and mother-in-law.
Okay. Well, the thing about it is somebody addicted to his voice is Edgar Steele, who's made all these podcasts. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. You know, it's just like...
Well, it does mean something.
It's like Michael Crichton.
It means that either the government fabricated that or it's true. What else can it mean?
Well, one of two things. That's tautological. And like I pointed before, what you choose to believe is what side you are. I mean, you might want to believe that Edgar Steele is guilty. You know, and like at the very end of the program, I told you that if Edgar Steele was walking down the streets of Sagal, he got pulled over by a Sagal police department. He had the heads of his wife and his mother-in-law and all the Steele kiddies and Morrisneys and, you know, six Jews. I mean, I'd say it was still a setup. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, but see, I'm trying to get you to argue the facts of the case in spite of your view that you really don't care. You want him to get away with it, and they framed him no matter what. But if you were to argue the facts, are you capable? I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
I could argue the facts. The fact of the matter is that insurance fraud, you know, insurance for murder is almost never an FBI matter. I was listening to your program. This guy who they were, you know, talking about, he is a longtime Aryan Nations informant. And the what happens is that Zog is scared shitless of Christian identity. They've been, you know, Waco and the rest of it. And so the thing about it is that I altogether think it's a FBI, you know, entrapment. And since I hate, you know, I mean, I think I told you about my dad essentially being entrapped, although he did run his mouth, by the FBI. You know, the thing about it is that since there is, you know, since I don't believe anything the government tells me, the fact of the matter is that probable cause would say, hey, Edgar Steele is not guilty. But I might also point out is that his wife wants to talk to him, and they are keeping him from being able to go ahead and talk to his wife. And if he was able to go ahead and get out on bond, and he should have been able to go ahead and make bond. But
He may yet. The court's not ruled.
My point is that according to the normal federal rules of criminal procedure, he should have made bond, you know, 15 minutes or whenever, the day after, when his wife goes to the bank or gets out a loan or gets a bail bondsman. He should have been able to make bond 15 minutes if he had the money after he got arrested. You understand what I'm saying? But they couldn't have that.
But I'm going to pretend that I was the federal judge over hearing this case. I'm the magistrate judge, and I've heard the arguments from Mr. Steele and Ms. Whelan, and I'm trying to decide whether or not to grant bond or not. Now, Ms. Whelan is arguing that he is a threat to his community. Mr. Steele is arguing that he's no threat to the community. So it's the judge's job to determine which is more likely the case. Now, if I'm the judge, I'm genuinely concerned about the safety of the community. I don't want to release someone into the community that's going to harm anybody. And it probably is the case that he probably, even if he's guilty of it, he probably wouldn't hurt Mrs. Steele now at this juncture, but you never can be, you know, sure of that. The fact of the matter is he could be guilty of sin. He could have tried to, you know, off his wife here with somebody, with a 20-year-old friend. If I'm reading these stories correctly out there, this guy who did this Fairfax, he's known Steele for 20 years. So you could understand.
Well, the fact of the matter is he probably did know Steele for 20 years, or maybe he didn't. The thing about it is that what he is, he's a little professional snitch spying on what's left of the Aryan Nations up in Idaho, which is Gerald O'Brien, who essentially that idiot, you know, that idiot has a web page, and that idiot don't even know how to go ahead and set up. You use your email as Jim or Radio Free Mississippi or something. That idiot don't even have his own personal account, and I'm pretty sure that he's an SPLC ADL plant. He showed up in 2003, and then essentially they're just going ahead, and it's all together He's an infiltrator. Now, as far as Edgar Steele, there's a lot
Let me comment about that. I think you may be right about that. That may be the case. But what's really hard to understand about Fairfax is why would he go to the feds and say, look, and see, this hasn't been confirmed 100%, but it's been reported by other media up there that this is the case, that he went to the feds and said, look, I've had second thought. He didn't tell him about the bomb. That's just fucking crazy.
Well, you end up getting the concise version. You know, I was impressed. This guy is truly a journalist because he learned from the old school that, you know, in order to go ahead and get somebody's attention, you go ahead and detail who, what, when, where, why, you know, in the very first paragraph, in the very first sentence if possible.
Right.
And he gave you the super condensed version.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But the thing about it is that this is not like the days of Trader Glor. This is, you know, Zog is treating its rats with complete contempt. Pretty well, Bill White, from what I gather, he was collaborating with this Rick Spring faction. He was collaborating with Zog, and I'm pretty sure Bill White, you know, and some people call him Bill Weiss, and I think he's part Jew. I mean, he's been pretty well been sent away. And Hal Turner was, you know, not only a rat, he was an actual Asian provocateur, and essentially they're not treating him like they did Trader Glenn Miller and putting him in the Federal Witness Protection Program. They're using their rats, and then they're going ahead and disposing of their rats. I think they're doing with this Fairfax the same thing that they've done with, you know, Hal Turner and with Bill White. Now, Hal Turner had a little bit more brains, and what he did is he went ahead and he turned the table saying, well, you people paid me to go ahead and be a rat. You people paid me to be a snitch. You people paid me to do that. And what happens is Zog is treating its rats rather unfairly, you know, just like with the Hunter Reed Militia. And
your presentation is not clear.
Okay. The thing about it is back in the days of Trader Glenn Miller, when he went ahead and turned rat, they went ahead and they put him, you know, in jail for 3 years, and then they put him in the Federal Witness Protection Program. And I'm pretty well convinced that Trader Glenn Miller has been a rat even since his Army days, spying on Klan activity. And but anyway, they used to treat their rats and traitors a lot better. But in the last couple of years, what happens is that the FBI has seemed to go ahead and use what they view as scum, with complete attempt here. I mean, the rats, you know, the FBI hates traitors. I mean, they may hate and respect, but they respect me. But someone like Hal Turner or Bill White / Weiss or the rest of them, they say about traitors, they say once a cocksucker, always a cocksucker. And they even despise traitors. And over the last couple of years, what with Bill White, you know, in December, you know, when he got convicted, and Hal Turner, he had two trials, both ending in a mistrial. He was supposed to have a third trial on August or on April 12th, and that ain't showed up yet. Maybe they decide to go ahead and leave him be. But what they do is they go ahead and they get these rats, and then they don't give a crap what happens to the rat. If the rat needs to go ahead and go to prison, you know, in order to go ahead and go after whoever the rat, that rat will go to prison. And that, you know, pretty well what's determined is that the person who was the informant is the same person who went ahead and planted the pipe bomb. And they don't care. Given him is a relatively minor charge because they're still going after, you know, Edgar Steele. But they don't really care about what happens to their particular rat. Now, Hal Turner had enough sense to where what he did is that he went ahead and he cut his losses. You know, in June, he admitted that he was a snitch, a rat. And then in August, he went ahead and admitted that he was not only a rat, but an agent provocateur, that the FBI paid him to go ahead and try to spy on the Aryan Nations, you know, spy on a number of people.
Yeah, I saw through him from the very start. I was never impressed with Hal Turner ever.
Well, I was sort of impressed. I was.
That's because you don't have my blue tick nose.
Well, maybe not. It's just that, you know, it's just that I've sort of seen, but what happens is that there's this character called Sci-Fi Faber, who's part of the August Christ faction of the Aryan Nations, and pretty well, he went ahead and turned on me for no other reason than vanity, but I knew he was an idiot, a Fruit Loop, and the rest here. So I've been going ahead and purging people who claim to be Christian identity when I catch them thieving or lying or dogbotting or whatever.
Pastor, give me some help. Give me some help here in replying to this email. The party just sent this in, and they say, subject, Lindstedt's focus. Start. What's the point of having an entire show, the bowel movement, quote-unquote, devoted to attacking people ostensibly on the same side? That seems likely to provoke them to attack you back. And everybody will then be wasting time, energy, and resources attacking each other. It seems more rational just to propagate whatever useful message you can without spending a lot of time gossiping and drawing retaliation. Stop.
Is that the end?
Yep.
Okay. I don't know if you went out and looked on YouTube at the movie Michael Collins, which came out in 1996.
I've got it written down. I've seen it before.
What he said is that the very first thing you have to do in order to go ahead and defeat the British Empire is he had to neutralize what was called the Royal Ulster Constabulary. So he went ahead and sent out a note that anybody collaborating with the English, you know, especially in the police, would be killed if they didn't go ahead and do it. And he did go ahead and kill informants. And as a result, he went ahead and blinded, the same thing. Now, the very first thing I have to do, and, that is the focus of my entire show, is I go ahead and I spy, I have sock puppets and spies on Stormfront, on BNNF, over on Pisser's Pussy Palace, since he nuked Pisser's Cinder because it became quite embarrassing, all the old posts, which revealed him to be a thief and a liar. And I spy on, I used to spy on Harold Covington until I became allies with him, and now I don't bother spying on him anymore. And what I do is on that show, usually it lasts about 3 hours, and I'm far more rambling than you are. I pretty well tell what has happened within the bowel movement.
Yeah, hold your point. Remember where you're at. I want to read a funny thing I just read on VNN's forum about me. I think it's really funny. One second. I want you to hear this.
Sure.
The most painful to listen to radio program on the planet, RebelArmy.com. The reason I picked up that is because hits to my site, I see where they come from, and they're coming. They provided the link. I'm sorry to have interrupted you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the point of the matter is to go ahead and get away. Go ahead and dispose of known traitors. And the thing about it is, in many cases, people bitch that I want to destroy Traitor Glenn Miller. I want to go ahead and destroy Visser. And the answer of it is I do not want to go ahead and destroy, Traitor Glenn Miller. I do not want to go ahead and destroy Visser, because once you go ahead and you find out someone is a rat, someone is an agent provocateur, you find out who supports them, and then who else is the supporting cast of agent provocateurs and rats. And pretty well the entire purpose of my show is bowel movement gossip. And as a result, I have quite a few people listening to it. In fact, this buck and this boxer who came in, they're always talking, about other people. And I pretty well set them straight as to which ones I regard as being genuine, even though I do not agree with many of their followers. And, the whole purpose of it is to go ahead and tell what is going on in the bowel movement today. And the
what is going on? What, tell me that. I forgot that. What is going on in the white money movement today?
Well, I call it the bowel movement. Well, what's going on is the same thing that's always been going on. Essentially, I used to think that Don Black was making a fortune, living well in Palm Springs, and his son Derek was able to get ski vacations on what they make from the sustaining members. And then I actually looked at the sustaining members, and I thought there was enough there to go ahead and do it. I sort of think the Stormfront, and I think DNNF, just like through Trader Glenn Miller, I just go ahead and have the joke that it's paid for by the petty cash drawer of the Department of Zogland Insecurity. And the fact of the matter is, it doesn't really cost, voice of retards and a number of stuff. Now, I was mad as hell at you, because I sort of thought you were helping Trader, Alice Linder, weasel out of him ratting on Bill White on December 15th through data mining. But I've gone ahead and listened to your programs, and I think you're genuine. But the fact of the matter is that in many cases, like when you don't know who the order was or who the order is, in many cases you don't know very much about movement history. And since I've been in the movement for 16 years,
I have seen it come and go. You lost me on that you were suspicious because of what? I didn't understand.
I was suspicious as hell, and I called you a roid, steroid. I called you a roid rage retard, because I was mad as hell at you because
you were just mad because I wouldn't interview you. That's the only reason.
Well, there
were
a lot of people who thought, that hey, he's in with Alex Linder and the rest here. He's scared to interview Pastor.
One of the things is my relationship with Alex is quite long. I've known him a long time, and he's well spoken and very. He's a good writer, in my opinion. Now, you were only on the periphery. I've interviewed Alex several times, and I'll be honest, Pastor Linstead, I still like Alex Linder. Just because and he may use poor judgment. I can't sort out all this stuff, and I'm not really trying to. But go ahead. You thought
you're not trying to sort out. And the reason of it is that Alex Linder is new to the movement. He didn't show up before 2000. Essentially, he was rescued from obscurity by William Pierce. And the point I've always made is that he's never been able to pay his own way. He had to go with Billy Roper after Pierce died. Because once Pierce was dead, there was no money coming in from Pierce. And I think I pointed out that, yes, Pierce got $400,000, but the fact that he received all this stolen order money, and you didn't even know who the order was, they received the stolen order money, it was a sword used against Pierce. And you still have these creatards, and one of them, White Will, Wiggers Will, who has a judgment against Covington they got from the Zog Court.
You mentioned, let me share with you another email I got that is in regard to money, too. Do you have posted on your, let me go to your site. Keep talking. I'm going to go to your site.
The creators, they hate Chris Giandandy. I mean, I could probably make peace with Craig Cobb or Corn Cobb. I met Corn Cobb in May 2009, and he was a total goof back then. And that's what gets me, and there's a lot of talk about Corn Cobb. Essentially, Corn Cobb comes from St. Joseph, Missouri, and why is he in Canada? Well, that's anti-hate central on the North American continent. Why is he in, why is he in Canada as opposed to St. Joseph, Missouri, having, hated Pod Blank? And late Kurt Maynard went ahead and sort of thought that Cobb was a Zog plant as well. And the fact of the matter is that most of the above-ground movements, they are altogether influenced by Zog. And these people who are rats, sooner or later, the FBI doesn't respect them, and they go ahead and send these people to prison. And they don't care.
That resonates. What you just said, that resonates with me. I still don't. I can't figure out how this pipe bomber would forget that he started out. He probably
didn't forget. But the thing about it is, he's probably being held as a guess what? you better take down Alex Lindner, because if you don't, what happens is the charges against you, you're going to get screwed. So chances are Edgar Steele is going to go ahead and get his trial one way or the other before, you know, before what's his name does. And if he doesn't go ahead and if he doesn't go ahead and produce a conviction, you know, he's going down for a time as a snitch and a rat. And snitches and rats are hated more than child molesters. So essentially, you know, in many cases, what this is just internal FBI discipline. I was looking at this account about how this bomb, you know, if it was planted when he said essentially old Cindy was tooling around with a fuse wrapped around the muffler, around the muffler for about 36 hours or 3 days, and the mechanic went ahead, disengaged it, then they pushed it out here. And he was talking, well, shoot, he only had it for about 10 minutes, and here's Mrs. Steele running around. So probably it was an inert bomb in the first place, or it was planted, you know, by the FBI. And what happens is that they're pretty well telling Mr. Rat, you know, Mr. Rat, you're getting a little bit of cheese. You better go ahead and produce something against Edgar Steele, or you really are screwed.
How does the FBI get Edgar Steele to have a conversation which they are recording, in which he's instructing this Fairfax to kill his wife and mother-in-law?
Well,
have you ever heard of that kind of fabrication before? Is that technologically, can they pull that off? Can they piece together a word here from Edgar Steele and a word there, and all of a sudden you've got a conversation, and Steele is explaining to Fairfax what he wants. Happens, he wants to, you know, all that. You think they can fabricate that?
Of course. In 1992, you know, when Michael Crichton came up with his novel Jurassic Park, he went, you know, in one of the paragraphs, he pretty well said that photographic evidence is pretty well worthless because it's so easy to fabricate. The same is true with audio tapes. I mean, Harold Covington, he has a cheap version of a software program that he is able to go ahead and use it here. And the military and the FBI and the police force always get the latest and greatest technological stuff here. So, yes, with someone like Edgar Steele, you know, who was very fond of his nickel rents, he could go ahead and cut a recording. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. See, the problem of it is that when you have the police able to go ahead and prove anything they want, then the answer of it is that no evidence becomes valuable at all, and it becomes a matter of which side do you believe. And that is the problem that Zog has had with Oklahoma City. I went ahead and I started, you know, after Timothy Veigh got convicted, I started a little short story, but by what I knew of some of the participants, called the Manchurian Oswald's Right Buttock. And when Timothy Veigh got arrested, he said that the CIA and Army Intelligence inserted a microchip in his buttock. Well, I said that they inserted it in his left buttock, and the Phineas Priest and the Christian Identity people inserted a microchip in his right buttock, and as a result, those two microchips are fighting for Timothy Veigh's soul. And people laughed. You know,
what is Phineas Priest?
Huh?
What is Phineas Priest?
What happens there was a, you know, Aaron, you know, Moses, you know, Moses was a Levite, and his older brother, you know, he tried to get out of becoming Moses by claiming that he couldn't speak real well. So Yahweh said, okay, Moses, well, you know, I'll let that go ahead and pass. Your brother Aaron will speak for you. And he became the first high priest. And during the wanderings of in the Sinai Desert, the southern Sinai Desert, Aaron's two eldest sons, they got lazy and stupid, and they let the sacred fire go out, so they tried to go ahead and revive it with an ordinary campfire, and Yahweh went ahead and killed them dead for their presumption. So the next oldest son was called Eleazar, and his son was called Phinehas. And in Numbers 25, when the Midianites are trying to go ahead and keep the children of Israel from from being strong as a result of Balaam and his ass. He went ahead and blessed them instead of cursed them. But he said, well, in order to get my money, why don't you go ahead and have these Midianite women, who were descended from Abraham as well through his third wife, Keturah, why don't you go ahead and have them seduce all these Israelite men and turn them away from God and unto their pagan religion? And that worked. And what happens is that Phinehas, he went ahead and seen this prince of Benjamin, screwing around with this Midianite, princess. So he went ahead and he took his spear, and he went ahead and killed them both. And that ended this sort of sexual disease that was spreading. And, pretty well Yahweh said that Phinehas would be the head, would be the head, of the religious thing. And I did a big thing about that. Well, in 1980, Richard Kelly Hoskins wrote a book called Vigilantes of Christendom, where supposedly Phinehas priests are going ahead and killing sinful Jews. Well, Jews are always sinful, but still, killing evil Whiggers who collaborate with Jews and traitors and race traitors and the rest of them. And as a result, a lot of these people claim to be Phinehas priests. And I do believe there is a Phinehas priesthood alive, but, not all of these people who claim to be Phinehas priests, or anything. Visser claims to be a Phinehas priest, and I said, you're not a Phinehas priest. You're a Felonious Mamzer.
I call him Big Bad John.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot, but generally, like I was trying to point out, is that for 10 and a half years, you didn't have any militia general convictions because all of them died out or they went underground, and as a result, they took all their informants, and their informants had nothing to latch upon. And
it's too much for me to believe the government has pieced together audio now. That's just too much. I mean, maybe they did. I mean, anything's possible, but to me, that's...
Well, for example, Don Black. I seen this about 4 or 5 years before I got thrown in jail. Don Black. They went ahead and photoshopped, and I have people who go ahead and, photoshop my head doing all sorts of stuff. And they went ahead and cut off Don Black's, head and grafted it to his body and said, here's Don Black, Grand Marshal of the Modern Gay Brigade here. And you can go ahead and they used to say, well, the square pixels will give them away. Well, not if you go ahead and take a picture of a screen, using film. You can go ahead and, spoof any picture. And like Michael Crichton said, and this is a book where, you're talking about DNA, getting DNA from, mosquitoes who bit dinosaurs and, turning them to clone dinosaurs. And what happens is you can do that with video. You certainly can do that with audio. So audio.
I don't doubt that you can't. You can do it, but I don't see how you could do it in a way that couldn't be proven as fabricated, or it would sound odd. They've got good technology.
No, there have been FBI lab. Controversies and the rest of them here. I mean, it's on 60 Minutes. These labs, in many cases, they're police labs, and they're out to go ahead and prove whatever the government wants them to prove. So once it comes down to it, who do you believe? I mean, I heard that, one-third, we were talking about these conspiracies. One-third of Americans don't believe in 9/11 as it's told for Oklahoma City. And across, in France, 90% of Frenchmen do not believe the story of 9/11. So, as a result, I mean,
and
ever
see,
since
that, this is a real important point you're bringing up, and I'm glad you did because it reminds me of something. I think you very much diminish credible attacks on who is responsible for 9/11 if you just recklessly say the government fabricated the audio that they're going to use against Edgar Steele.
Well, do you believe the 9/11 story?
No, I believe Mossad did it.
Okay, well, when I was 12 years old, I was a mean little kid, and what I liked doing is shooting my shooting my shooting my dad's brown leghorn rooster with my BB gun, and I aim it to where, you know, I hit him right at the tip of his wings, you know, right where his feathers were the thinnest, and watch that rooster just go ahead and jump about 4 feet in the air when he got struck by a BB. But one day I went ahead and missed and hit the chicken right in the eyeball. And the chicken flopped and flopped and flopped around. And I was saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? When luckily, my big pet white German Shepherd Roy went ahead and he seen that flopping chicken and he went ahead and engulfed it in his mouth. Whoop! So guess what? Who killed the chicken? I killed the chicken. Who got the ass beaten from my dad for killing the chicken? Old Roy did. So that's the same thing. That's the same thing that's happened at 9/11 here. And that's the same thing I believe is happening with Edgar Steele. I mean, if a 12-year-old boy can get away from a deserved ass beating by blaming somebody else, I'm quite sure Jews and the FBI can do the same thing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, anything's possible, and your point about who do you want to believe is very correct. I mean, that's a good point. But see, I understand your point about you'd like to get him to get away with it no matter what because you like him.
Well, no, in many cases, I fought with the bastard. I called him the Wigger Whipper. He, it was an email. It was an email about what? The time he was wanting to run for governor, and. My friend John Burton sent an email. He lives in Idaho. He says, Edgar, Pastor Martin Listed calls you a wigger whimper. And Edgar Steele went back and said, yeah, but everyone says that Pastor Martin Listed is batshit insane. And then the reply from Pastor John Burton is, Pastor Listed says that he'd rather be an insane Nazi than a typical Wigger, or in your case, Wigger Whimperer. And so, in short, me and Edgar have not exactly seen eye to eye over the way the movement should be. He wants it to go ahead and be an above-ground movement. He wants it to be strictly legal. And I'm pointing out that, just like I did with the militia generals, is that there is no such thing as a constitutional militia. And just like my hero, Felix Dzerzhinsky, he went ahead, exterminated, as Lenin's secret policeman, as the first head of what became the KGB, he went ahead, he rounded up these policemen all the way up to the Tsar. He'd torture them, they'd confess, and then he'd go ahead and, shove them off to the mob and send their families to death camp. And by means of that, he went ahead and seized power. And I have not heard of a single person who Felix Dzerzhinsky exterminated ever going ahead and getting judicial review. Everything that Felix Dzerzhinsky did was legal after the fact.
Well, that's a quietest I've you've gone. I didn't know you could go that long and be quiet.
Well, I'm pretty bad about it. But the thing about it is that if you go ahead and you seize power after the fact, then you can go ahead and justify anything else here. Richard Levins, he's going to confess to anything I want him to confess. And just like I told him, in one of these things where I was complaining about not being allowed to run for sheriff on the Nut House, not being allowed a notary public. Here's Levis bombing off, and I said, look, Copeland. Essentially, if I gave Levis a choice, and I gave Durham a choice, and I gave Chu a choice of who to skin alive first, before they, their turn was up here, Levis and Durham would go ahead and skin you alive without any trouble. Chu would go ahead and cry while he was doing it. And, Levins and During and Copeland and Chu did not like me saying that. The fact of the matter is the pigs assume that they can go ahead and destroy any social order, but somehow people like me are going to go ahead and be bound by a scrap of toilet paper called the Constitution Bill of Goods. And that's why I used to say in the militia movement is that the only legitimate militia are the ones which arise from the people, not those that arrive from a scrap of toilet paper. It's called the Constitution, which is nothing more than giving power over white men in order for Jews and niggers and spics to interpret it. What do you think is going to happen here now that there's no really any more Protestant white men to go ahead and even start a even flow or even a pretense of looking after whites? What do you think is going to happen when, you know, today in 2006 to 2008 to 2010, an open white man is not allowed to run for political office? Do these elections have any legitimacy? And the answer is they have absolutely none. It's a matter of which side is going ahead and going to be the strongest and the best. And since you believe in absolute collapse, why worry about the legality? Go ahead and fight for the survival. And I was going to tell you, you're mentioning on your show you had two cows named, you know, Napoleon and Josephine.
No. Napoleon's the bull now. Don't be offending, insulting Napoleon. Napoleon's my bull.
Napoleon and Josephine, they're both being dehorned or something?
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
And what are they, Jerseys or something like that?
Yep.
Okay, let me go ahead and ask you here. You know, I'm a pastor, which means I'm a shepherd of the sheep of Israel. But let's say, you know, here you are, you're on your farm, and you have enough acreage for five cattle. But what happens is that as a result of, neglect, you haven't been doing a very good job, you end up having 20 cattle on a place that will go ahead and support five, and about three or four are nigger cattle, and there's five or six beaner cattle, and there's an evil little Jew cow, and the rest are wigger cows, including Napoleon Josephine, but they have a little bit more, they have a capability of being white cows. And let's go ahead and further say that of those 20 cows, 18 of them have an extreme advanced case of brucellosis or Bang's disease, to where not only, it's contagious, but not only is that here, it can be spread pneumatically. And so you won't have room for five cows anyway. You have 20 head, and 18 of them are extremely diseased. What are you going to do? And the only two cows that are left that are not diseased are Napoleon and Josephine. What are you going to do with your herd?
That's interesting. It's going to be real interesting to see how white people answer that question. Clearly, there's.
How do you answer the question?
Oh shit! I start killing them fucking strays, man.
Well, you'll start. You might start with the nigger cows, and you might start with the spit cows, and you might certainly first on the list is the dirty little Jew cow.
Well, I won't flinch.
What happens, you're going to have to go ahead and also kill seven or eight diseased wigger cows, too.
Yeah, I understand. I get the analogy completely. I'm just wondering how the wider white public answers that question.
Who cares what the white... You've already said that it doesn't matter what the mass says
well,
here.
But it does matter as to those underground Big Bad Johns who are sitting out there and waiting on something. I'm talking about that hardcore nucleus that is out there.
I'm calling for Napoleon and Josephine to go ahead and don't let you take their horns, Jim. Go ahead, keep their horns, and go ahead and rise up and kill those worthless, diseased nigger cows. And make sure that the Jew cow goes first, and the nigger and beater cows, they're first. But they have to go ahead and deal with these diseased wigger animals too.
Yeah, I like it a lot. But I like it a lot. But the reason you got to get rid of those horns, especially with milking cows, is they poke you when you go. You got to be around them and feed them, and they, Mildred, one of my cows out there now, she's bad about taking her head, and because the flies and horse flies are so bad now, she will take her head from a low position in front of her, and just all of a sudden, if a horse fly gets on her back, she'll take that head and swing it back real quick. And if you get in the way of that head, I tell you, you've been butted by, she didn't hurt you, she didn't break your arm. And I've talked.
Well, we used to have a milk cow we called Dolly, and she was a Guernsey, and we didn't really have any room on our farm for bulls. So you know, usually most of the cows were males anyway. But I do understand that. I mean, but usually the time I think to go ahead and dehorn them is for what a short period you have of winter when the flies ain't so bad.
Yeah, it would have been better had I dehorned them when they were younger too. It would have been easier hauling them. But surprisingly, it's not that big a deal, and I'm looking forward to getting that behind me. They need to be dehorned big time.
And I'm not. You know, I end up going ahead using an analogy to go ahead and point out is that you know with full seed line, you know with dual seed line, you know, essentially there is no such thing as a good Jew. There is no such thing as a good nigger. There is no such thing as a good beaner. There's no such thing as a good non-white. And even if there is such a thing, they have no business living in a white society. And as a result of that logic, Christian identity, and especially dual seed line Christian identity, is the actual religion of the vast majority of the above ground and below ground resistance. And essentially, with my 10,000 warlords project, I mean, I wouldn't mind you being one of the 10,000 warlords. And if you, whether you believe it or not, whether you do believe that Satan came down as a nigger, off the wilderness, earthy and had sex with Eve and gave birth to the first Jew, and you seem to be rather receptive to that idea. I mean, whether or not you would have at least a structured, you would at least have a structured theological construct. I mean, in many cases, there will be people, sort of like Reverend Hardy Mongoloid, who don't really believe in anything other than themselves, but who will go ahead and repeat Christian identity dogma in order to go ahead and justify religiously a war, a racial and religious and civil class holy war.
The dogma is problematic with me. It was problematic with me with the Southern Baptists down here. I don't care for that dogma. Mine is a much more pure and simple faith. God and Jesus are talking to me directly, and you can't beat that. I mean, that kind of spirit, you can't beat it. I don't have to explain. I don't have to explain
God,
it. You
Jesus,
can just
God,
see it. You can, they can
God,
see it.
Jesus,
they can feel it.
God.
They can feel it. And you
Yahweh,
know,
Yahweh and Christ talk to me every day too.
Follow me. You know, when God and when people fully realize that boy Ted Jimmy, God and Jesus are talking to him, and he's saying, "Follow me, God damn it! I want to follow him." And see, let some bad economic times get going, and I think anything's possible. But I've enjoyed speaking with you. I really have.
Okay, well maybe go ahead and check out my webpage, and I'll go ahead and send you an email from time to time. I mean, I really do think that you don't. I mean, I've been in the movement for 16 years, and I was in the movement before Alex was. Man, I seen what was going on. Trader Van Miller has been in the movement for a long time ago, and the fact of the matter is that anybody who has anything to do with Trader Glenn Miller, essentially, you've ended up lost in what I call the old resistance, the resistance before Waco. I mean, I was trying to go ahead and be friendly to this guy named John Nugent. His actual name, he calls himself John D. Nugent, but his actual name is John Nugent. And essentially, I was trying to go ahead and be friendly to him, but John Gerhardt, who pretty well runs the legal effort among the resistance, and he used to be Christian Identity, but he's trying to go ahead and make common cause with all these wokeness and stirrers and creatards who are political prisoners, and I don't begrudge him any of that. And he just told me is that I could not go ahead and be friends or make peace or make allies with John Nugent because John Nugent was siding with Trader Alex Linder and Trader Glenn Miller. And I called him up on April 9th and just pretty well stuck it, asked him a question here. And he refused to do it. But later on, he gets on BNNF here, and they go ahead and say that he's a big faggot He's a big faggot, the homosexual lover of this little, you know, Finnish kid who got deported, named Herrick Apala or something like that. And essentially, he gave up posting at Four Fags Feet. And, oh, by the way, Fade, you know, Fade the Butcher asked me to go ahead and say hello, you know, on your show. Or, Fade Butcher, Hunter Wolf, and, you know, he didn't do that, but I'll go ahead and, you know, give him a call, and, you know, Harold Covington, the rest.
Who said to say hello to who? What now?
Fade the Butcher / Hunter Wallace, and what happens is that he's a short little fat kid. He got showed, and he was wearing a yellow suit. And he looked sort of like the Pillsbury Doughboy, but he went ahead and discovered a set of balls. He went ahead and, you know, heckled this little Jew agitator who disrupted the American Renaissance, American Renaissance thing. So he went ahead and heckled them, and what happens? He got showed up, and he's a little short, fat, 5'2", short, fat little character here. He looks sort of like the Pillsbury Doughboy. And
why do you emphasize that in him? Why do you emphasize that?
Well, the thing about it is that usually, you know, a lot of time I call him Cunter or something like that, but Fade the Butcher or Hunter Wallace, and other people know his real name, but I'm not going to go ahead and repeat it. The thing about it is what he's very good at is he's good at creating all these forums and getting all these little intellectuals to go ahead and get behind him. Now, most of the time, just like when you harassed him about killing Jews, he's still whining and pissing and moaning about it. And I'm calling him cunt here and say, look, my settler forefathers, they knew the best time to kill an Indian was when the Indian was young. Because a whole lot of Indians killed 10 little, 9 little, 8 little, 7 little, 6 little, 5 little, 4 little, 3 little, 2 little, 1 little Indian boys is when they're small, rather than wait for a big old Indian that's able to go ahead and sneak up behind you and murder you and kill you. Best time to kill them is when they're young and through smallpox blankets. So whining about killing Jewlets, little tigerlets, it's a dishonest exercise. They're all the spawn of Satan. And I chewed on his ass for being a pussy. But he actually did show a set of balls. And that's the problem with people. You know, I'm somewhat of an intellectual, but the time is that Adolf Hitler despised intellectuals. You know, I've pointed out is that Adolf Hitler will like cool seed line piss people like me, because guess what? You know, there wouldn't be no pissing and moaning about shooting dirty Jews if he had a few people like me and Pastor John Britton running his extermination squads here. We would have killed that dirty spawn of Satan.
You know,
Jews, all
the one thing I dislike about the Hitler thing is the harping on the past. I really don't care for the past that much. I don't care for it in terms of theology, American history, German history, World War II history. It's interesting, and some people are more informed. And I know it has a lot to do with where we're at today. But ultimately, the bottom line for me is to be able to identify the enemy and to get a group of people behind you to go get the enemy. And that doesn't necessarily have to do with a history lesson. The leader needs to be aware of it, but there's just too much, you know. In other words, the leadership that matters is not historic; it's present and future leadership. That's what I'm interested in.
Okay, but if you have to have followers, who better if you want to go ahead and kill Jews than somebody who thinks from birth that they are the misbegotten evil spawn of Satan, or somebody who used to be a Pentecostal linhead who's gone through dispensationalists who think that they are that they are God's chosen people and has only recently understood how evil they are.
When it comes to a fight, I'm a real simple person. If somebody hates me and is trying to kill me, I want to defend myself. And as far as the followers out there, I want to convince the followers out there that the Jews and the niggers, they hate us. They're trying to kill us. They are killing us. So let's fight back. Let's resist. This is a fucking fight. Let's go get them. It's a real simple thing. You know, the one thing I dislike about the movement, they make it too complicated. This is real. It's in its pure essence, this is a fight for survival. It sounds ridiculous. That sounds ridiculous. That sounds absurd. That sounds fucking crazy. But I think it's the fucking truth. And so you really dilute your message if you get away from it is a fucking fight, man. Let's go get them. So.
Okay.
But
with Christian identity, what you said about the Jews and the niggers and the rest, all we have to say is Genesis 3:15. That's all we have to say. And then it says these people are the misbegotten spawn of Satan. They are the enemy. Exterminate them. It's Yahweh's will. And any wigger who goes ahead and collaborates with them here are the adoptive spawn of Satan. Genesis 3:15. Kill them all.